How you guys doing? Awesome. You guys are ready. Wow, my job's done. I have fallen off the stage many times. That wouldn't be a first. So you guys are awesome, man. You guys are fired up, ready to go. Who's ready to finish out 2017 strong? Yeah. I think personally, this is the most important event of the year strategically, because what are most people doing right now? They're already like done for the year, right? They're already waiting for the new year and the holidays. You guys are here ready to finish 2017 strong. That is awesome. Who's ready to just crush 2018? All right, you're in the right place for sure. Man, this is going to be an amazing, amazing event. Who here is, this is your very first event? Wow. A lot of people. Give them a hand, man. That is fantastic. How many of you guys have no idea what you're doing here? Your wife dragged you. That guy back there, he's like, yeah, I don't know what the heck, man. There's always several of us that were dragged to our first event, and but it's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. You're going to have a great time. You're going to learn a lot. Who's ready to learn something new? Awesome. Who's ready to get rid of old thinking and old baggage you've been dragging around that's been holding you back? Who's ready to get rid of that? Make room for some new stuff, right? This weekend is going to be spectacular. Danny is on fire right now. Who was with us at the Hot Marriage Secrets event? How's your life been? Wow, that was a crazy event. So we've got a couple more events this year, and then we're launching into a phenomenal 2018 with some great new things that are just you're gonna absolutely love. So let's get through our house cleaning a little bit. Everybody got their seat? Looks like we're full. This is your seat for all of today until we break for dinner. Okay, there is an evening session tonight, which is open to the public, so that this will not be your seat for that event. But for the entire day, this is your seat, so you don't have to worry about getting in line every time, all that kind of thing. So look at the person to your right and to your left. If they're not there when you get back from your next break, you're probably in the wrong place. It's probably you, not them, right? All right. Also, this particular event is being streamed live to four other countries. So if you could help me welcome by looking back at the camera and waving at those guys, folks from the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. All right. So does everybody have an ethics agreement? Awesome. If anybody did not have one, I should probably say that. We have our ethics agreement fairies. Can run over here. Oh, there we go. Everybody got one? Anybody else? We got one back there by the camera. This is really important. We've got a bunch of people back in the corner over there. Awesome. Cool. This is one of the things that makes this event different from any other event. This particular agreement that you're about to read and sign is the thing that's going to allow you to have a safe place to learn without having to worry about other weirdness, okay? How many of you guys just are here to learn something for yourself? You're here because you want to improve in some area of your life. And so that's what this ethics agreement allows us to do without worry of anything else going on. So why don't we read this together? And every month, I need these more and more. Now that I am 51 years old. All right. You guys got it? You guys ready? I, Brian Niederhaus, understand and agree to the following. Okay, you're reading. Okay, good. It was really quiet, it seemed like. So, all right, this seminar is an open seminar, and there are other people here this weekend, like myself, from their respective companies that have made a considerable investment in attending this seminar and developing their businesses. I understand and agree that I will honor and respect others in attendance at this event the entire weekend, and I will not represent myself, my company, my business, or DannyJohnson.com in an unethical manner. I understand that while I am encouraged to make new contacts and friends this weekend, that this event is not a recruiting forum or opportunity to solicit others about my products, business, or opportunity. I understand that I am responsible for my own actions, and that if I am found dishonoring others or their businesses here this weekend, I will immediately be asked to leave the seminar without refund, and I will not be allowed to attend any future Danny Johnson events. It's a steep price. You don't want to have to pay that price. So if you wouldn't mind signing that and then passing it to the middle of the aisle this way, and they will pick those up from you. All right. How many of you guys have a cell phone on you? A little pocket computer. A couple of things. Chad's already mentioned this, but there is no recording of audio or video of this event, okay? No streaming to your private Facebook group of people that weren't as committed as you. No recording to share with your team later or whatever. This is being professionally recorded, and you will have access to that recording later, you know, a couple of days after the event. But please do not record or stream or anything like that. In fact, we highly recommend that you just turn this off between the breaks. At the breaks, you can check your emails, whatever. But during this time, it's really important for a couple of reasons. Number one, some of the things that you're going to hear today are going to be one sentences, like that are, it's going to be a little nugget that is going to change everything for you. Who's experienced that that's been here before? It's just one little thing that Danny says. Danny talks pretty fast. How many of you guys know that? You do not have a time or chance to be distracted at anything, or you're going to miss something, right? We cannot possibly listen and absorb as fast as Danny talks. So the distractions need to be kept to a minimum. And turning off that cell phone and allowing that just to be completely off and away and not even in your peripheral will stop you from being distracted, but most importantly, will stop other people from being distracted. How many of you guys know when somebody's cell phone lights up, everybody looks at it, right? So we really want to be honoring to other people and make sure that we're giving everybody the best chance to get the maximum amount of information and education out of this weekend. Are we in agreement on that? Awesome. Good deal. So if you've got any cell phones or iPads or anything like that, please turn all that stuff off. And I think we got all that covered. Cool. Who's ready for Danny? All right, this is going to be a spectacular weekend. I had a chance to meet Danny about 23 years ago now. I owned a bicycle shop in Northern California. Who are the traditional business owners out there in the crowd today? Quite a few of you. Awesome. And I was working crazy hours, 80 to 100 hours a week. How many of you guys can relate with that? And my family and I had invested $250,000 into this business just to get the doors open. We were working 80 to 100 hours a week and struggling financially, even though our business was doing well. We were doing well over $1 million a year in sales. We had a great reputation in our community. You know, it was very, very popular bicycle store. We were doing great in a lot of ways, but by the time we got done paying off all of our employee expenses, all of our insurances, rent, advertising, you know, computers, all that kind of stuff, we were literally taking home about $25,000 a year. And I was at the end of my rope about 4 years into this, almost $500,000 in debt at this point, going, this is not what I signed up for. Our family would have a family meeting every year, and we just look at each other going, what is going on? Because, you know, as passionate as we were about that business when we first started, that passion had gone and left, and the stress had come in, and it was tearing our business, our family apart. And I got a chance to meet Danny Johnson when I came to an event just like this, a First Steps to Success event, because I wanted to join a home-based business to make some extra money that Danny happened to be part of. But she wouldn't let me join the business until I came here. she told me that you can't, we can't have any failures in our business. I'm like, how do you know I'm a failure? You know? But no, her point was that to get trained up and to be a professional in whatever it is we were doing, that was what was important in her home-based business. She treated her home-based business like an executive would treat a new hire in a Fortune 500 company. She wanted people that were committed and were trained up as professionals to help her grow her entire organization. And I'll tell you something, that was the best weekend of my life. It changed everything. There were things in that weekend that little nuggets that I grasped onto that were life-changing for me. I was able to come back and apply a lot of that thing, a lot of what I learned to my traditional business, my bicycle store. She did let me finally join that home-based business and went on to do some amazing things with that. Over the next year or so, I made about $12,000, which was amazing as a part-time income. But it was really the year that I learned how to build a business in the way that Danny does it. From then on, our business just continued to grow and grow, and I'll be able to share more of my story on Monday, but I'll tell you something, it is more than just being able to go out and make some money. How many guys would like to repair relationships in your life? Maybe there's a few of them out there. That was one of the benefits I didn't expect when I came to that first Steps of Success. My brother and I, my parents and I, we were in a bad spot. And that we were able to really move that into a much, much better place. How many of you guys are looking to make some extra cash? Yes, right? Danny is going to share with you strategies and unique things that are going to help you do that almost immediately. I was able to come out of my first training and make over $2,000 in my first 10 hours just learning applying some of the things that she learned. Who could use that? Absolutely. How many of you guys would like to be unshackled from debt? I was $500,000 in debt at the point of coming into this first event. People in this room have come through this, were well, way worse than that even, and have been able to pull themselves out of debt, live a totally different life. And you're going to hear stories of people who have paid off millions of dollars in debt and are now living debt-free. How many guys could live like that? Like no mortgage, no consumer debt, no car debt, nothing. How different would your life be if you woke up every morning not owing a nickel to anybody? There are people in this room that have accomplished that. Talk to those people this week, and you're going to get to hear from people that have applied the strategies that Danny taught. This is one of the things that makes Danny unique, is that you're going to not just leave here with motivation and inspiration and excitement and all that. You're going to leave here with the how-tos, the intangible things that are going to take you from where you're at today and put you at a completely different level. Who's ready for that? All right, we are excited about this weekend. It is going to be a spectacular, spectacular weekend. We're going to see some changes in this particular group of people that it's going to be off the charts. We are excited to see where you guys are going to be at by the end of this year and the end of next year. The transformation in your life personally and the lives around you is going to be spectacular. So if you please help me welcome to the stage America's favorite millionaire, Danny Johnson.
Are on fire. Good morning, good morning, good morning. So very excited to be here, and I don't know why. I'm serious. We just finished the very first ever marriage conference about 4 weeks ago. I guess they were there. And after that conference, I thought, how in the world could I ever do a First Steps to Success again? Like, how could I ever, after that kind of an experience and that level of intensity and intimacy and healing that happen inside of our clients and the massive transformations that we literally watched with our own eyes, I thought, how in the world could we go back and do a first step to success? Someone else needs to do that because I just want to do what I just finished. And so I was really concerned about that. And as this event approached, which again, Hot Marriage Secrets was just 4 weeks ago, man, something started brewing inside of me. And I am so very excited about the brand new people who are here, as well as our graduates that are here. I'm excited for us to roll up our sleeves, get to work, and help you improve every area of your life. I'm so excited about you annihilating your debt in the next 5 to 7 years, which is what we're going to teach you how to do this next 3 days. I'm so excited about helping you and teaching you and training you exactly how to dominate in the marketplace, how you will become the number one recommended person at what you do. And I don't care if that's a mother, a father, or I don't care if you're a professional, a CEO, and or that you are a mechanic or a waitress, it doesn't matter, or a student, it doesn't matter what it is that you are today, you will be, by the time you're done learning and being trained and learning new skills, you'll be the number one recommended person at what you do. You will obliterate your competition after applying the information you're going to get this weekend. You're going to get a hotter marriage. You are going to have better in relationships where you're not having so much stress with the people you live and work with anymore. You are going to learn some skills that's going to show you how to increase your income to a point where it shocks you if you choose to go down that road. Some of you don't want to increase your income. That's okay. Some of you are going to gain some purpose to your life. You're going to find a destiny that's been calling out to you, and you're going to learn to walk in that calling over the next 3 days. I'm excited because every single time we do these events, we see people's lives change dramatically in every possible way. And if at any point you're skeptical about that, all you have to do is talk to a few of the people that are in this room who have been here before you. And as you hear their stories, it will build your faith and you will know there's nothing impossible. My life might be a mess, but it ain't as messy as that guy's was. And I'm pretty sure that your life wasn't as messy as mine. So before we get into all the training and before we start developing new skills, specifically this morning, you're going to learn how to overcome some things that you don't even know are in front of you. Oftentimes people fail because they're blinded. They are in denial. They are completely deceived by their current set of circumstances, and they're allowing their current set of circumstances to determine where they're going in life. You're going to discover what's been hindering you, what's been hindering those around you, and how to be able to overcome. If fear is something that you've been bound by, you're going to obliterate that sucker right before your eyes to where it no longer is something that is going to control you. You're going to discover some things about yourself this morning. And in discovering those things about yourself, you're also going to learn about other people. That's what we're going to tackle this morning. Before we get there, I want you to understand that if you have any bit of the mindset that I had when I first got started in the business world nearly 30 years ago, I can't even believe I can say that. Anytime you can say 20 years ago, you're old. When you have now approached the 30 year ago, I don't even know what to say about that. That's a whole nother level of old. But let me get this out of the way. First of all, I'm a mother. I have five adult children, and I have 8 grandchildren. 2 of our kids have produced. Our oldest daughter has 6. Our second oldest daughter has 2. That's our family, and they say hello. A couple of them are here in the room. Yes, so that's my husband, Hans, with the big beard. Amazing, gorgeous, phenomenal, brilliant man that I get to live my life with every day. And I just love being with every part of him. We have 3 sons. The 3 sons are on this half of the picture. And then our 2 daughters are on that half. And my daughter's husband there on the very end. And all those babies, which are absolutely adorable. And I don't care how great and cute you think your grandkids are. Do I need to say anything else? We don't need to argue about it, right? Yours are cuter than mine, and I know the truth. Anyway, and your kids are smarter than mine, but I know the truth. You'll get the chance to meet 2 of them. We also have an additional one. We adopted another one along the way, our spiritual daughter, Issa, who actually just got married. You'll get to see her tonight as well. She's here this weekend, and she just got married coming up on 2 months ago. Beautiful girl. I think we have a picture of Issa in there. There she is. Yes, she's been a part of our family for the last 11 years, 12 years coming up here in a month, and truly a great blessing. So that's pretty much our whole family. There's a lot of us. How many of you have a big family? Anybody? Okay, well, I want to tell you that I come from the most terrible set of circumstances. I used to think that if you weren't born to a successful family, you can forget about it. You're not going to be successful. I used to think that if you weren't raised on the right side of the tracks, right, and you didn't go to college, and if you weren't smart, then you can forget about it. You're always going to be stuck in the place that you were born into. And that's really what I thought, until somebody clobbered me over the head with a completely different mindset. As I began to study successful people, I found out that there were a whole lot of them that grew up in dysfunctional homes, abusive homes, even single parent homes, even some of them that didn't even graduate from the eighth grade, let alone from high school. You see, I was that kid that grew up with dyslexia. I didn't read my first book till I was 21 years old. The words on the page jumped all over the place, right? And I would skip lines and then go back up. Not only that, but when I finally started to get my eyes straight to where I could actually, like, one word at a time, well, then I didn't understand a darn thing I was reading. Has it ever happened to anybody? You can read an entire page and go, what did I just read? That was me. I didn't understand anything that I was attempting to read. So my first book that I actually read cover to cover, I was 21 years old and actually was homeless at the time. I found out that as I studied successful people, that many of them grew up in lots of different environments. Now, I'm not saying all of them grew up in abusive environments, but there was a lot of them that did. And then, of course, there were some that had, you know, Leave It to Beaver, and they got to go to Harvard, and they got, you know, to go on vacations, and, you know, they never worried about food. They just had wonderful life experience, and then, poof, you know, they were successful. So that's who I used to look at. I used to look at those people and used to also think that, man, if you don't become successful fast, then you're never going to become successful. Well, I found out that I had some lies in my head that I believed. I don't know. I have any idea where those suckers came from. All I do know is that I disqualified myself from succeeding in anything simply because of what my past was. When I looked at my childhood, which I still was suffering from at the age of 19 when I started in business, that suffering childhood was this. The man that raised me was 6'10", 350 pounds, and he was as violent as his size. My mother was 5'5", a screaming little Italian-Irish woman who also had a nice little temper and really liked to, well, let's just say pull a scab off. The scab being the man that raised me. Let me just see if I can razz him up. Maybe your house was full of peace and dignity and honor and parents that just loved each other. Mine beat each other up, and we also were badly abused physically. I was screamed at, cussed at, cursed. I was told I was fat, ugly, stupid, and I would never amount to anything, that I could never do anything right. The man that raised me, I mean, we talk about a giant hand and a man that's almost 7 feet tall. Imagine being punched with that hand when you are just a little thing. Imagine being kicked with a size 16 shoe. Imagine, well, my parents were on welfare my entire growing up life until I was nearly 14 years old. My mom actually, when I was 11, broke her neck. And as a direct result of breaking her neck, it took about 3 years, all of a sudden some money came in because there was some malpractice issues that happened with the breaking of her neck. And all that changed was there was a bigger house, there was steak and more fighting, more drugs. So I would wake up for school, for example, 5 years old, heading on to kindergarten, right? My dad would be rolling 20 joints. But when I got home, he was still in his blue boxer shorts. How many of you remember those blue boxer shorts? He was still, please tell me someone's not wearing those still. People still wear those blue, they still make those blue boxer shorts. Okay. Anyway, so those blue boxer shorts that came from Kmart, right? He'd be sitting in his boxers, rolling those 20 joints, television was on, and when I got home from school, same exact scene. Same boxer shorts, rolling more joints, and still watching television. So laziness was in the home. Never once saw either one of my parents get up and go to work. Not a single time did I once see them get up and go to a job. Welfare was our income, as well as any other government handout that they could get their hands on, including lying, oh, my back, and being on disability, and then getting caught playing basketball. Yeah. Even choosing not to live, not to claim that he's living in the house so that she got more money. Just finding every possible government handout that there was to keep them stuck and to keep them in their lazy lifestyle. Neither one of them wanted to work. They just wanted to smoke weed all day long. They just wanted to party all day long, even though they had three children in the house. So I clearly was groomed to fail. I mean, think about it. Did I learn from my parents a good work ethic? No. Did I learn a good business ethic? Did I learn any good financial skills from my parents? No. Please tell me, what did I learn that was somehow going to prepare me for success in life? What was going to prepare me for marriage? Think about it. My training ground was my mom and dad beating each other up and then violently abusing the three of us little girls. I can tell you times of seeing my dad grab a towel bar off of the wall and beating my little sister's head into the wall. The kind of level of violence, of blood and bruising, seeing my mother being beaten to a point of non-recognition, being, hello, picked up by the ambulance and taken off to the hospital. Many times, not once. We're talking, this was a normal occurrence in the house that I grew up in. You know, cops at the house and then the drug dealers at the house. Do you understand what I'm saying? This and the television on 24/7. When my mom broke her neck and then eventually got the settlement, they started doing cocaine and prescription pills. I remember big, giant grocery bags filled with whites, filled with reds, which are uppers and downers, just in case you don't know. And it's pretty sad that I do know. Anyway, every kind of prescription drug you can imagine, Percocet, Percodan, Valiums, Vicodin, and watching them by the handful swallowing these pills. So I'd watch my parents be amped and then drooling when they would come down. They would go between uppers and downers, uppers and downers. So seriously, I was groomed to fail. I was groomed to fail in every possible way. So at the age of 19, when I'm introduced to the business community, I just knew there's no way that I could ever succeed in anything. My biggest dream and hope was to marry a guy that wouldn't beat me or my children. That was my biggest hope. My biggest dream was that I would not end up like my parents, and that was it. Now I have a question for you. How many of you had a similar childhood that I had? Just a couple of you. But how many of you grew up going, I don't want anything that my parents have? I don't want their relationship. I don't want their finances. I don't want their lifestyle. I don't want their health. There is nothing my parents have that I want. How many of you came from that kind of a place? Well, check this out. When I was 18 and pregnant with my first child, yes, out of wedlock, and that went over so gracefully. Not. I was in a town of 700 people. There were more churches than there were gas stations. Okay, so this was a super religious community, and the guy that my boyfriend, who we'd been together for like 3.5 years at that point, well, his parents were the deacons of the church. His mom was the secretary at the Christian school. They had no idea that their son was sneaking out at night and drinking and partying and, well, having sex. Not just with me, come to find out after I get pregnant. But there were several girls that he was sleeping with at the age of 19. It was really awesome. So anyway, that wonderful judgment that came from that church, that I was the harlot, I must have seduced him because there's no way he would have ever ended up with her. Yeah, anyway. So 18 and pregnant. I mean, sorry, I'm 17 and pregnant. I find out that the man that raised me was not my dad. That was a big one to swallow. But that my father, my biological father, yeah, he was about 6 foot tall, and he was from Managua, Nicaragua. And when my aunt told me that my father was from Managua, Nicaragua, I said, which state is that in? I didn't even know that was a different country. I failed geography. Wait, where is that? Is that near, like, Alabama or something? Is that in Texas? Where is Nicaragua? She says, well, have you ever heard of Engelbert Humperdinck? And I'm like, no. Who's that? Well, he's a famous singer, and your dad looks a lot like him. She goes, go to Tower Records and look at an album of him, and that's what your dad looks like. And I'm like, he's a, like, Hispanic guy. He had dark skin, this like super carpeted hair, and this one eyebrow that went from one side of his head to the other side of his head, and his mustache looked exactly the same. Just like this hair, right? He had really dark skin. He had black eyes and these furry eyelashes. I met him when I was 18, and that was a crazy experience that I finally, when I met my little brother, who happens to be here in the room, he was 18 months old. My sisters, who were all younger than I was, I had an older sister that was 3 years older than I was, and I looked like everybody versus the family I grew up with, who had blonde hair, green eyes, and here was this darky kid who, you know, grew up in Los Angeles and was dark-skinned all year round. And there's my white sisters with this blue eyes and one green-eyed and blonde hair and totally different body shapes, and I get in with my real sisters. It's like, you could have taken off our heads and put them on different bodies. You're like, let me just switch, because we were all built the same. I finally felt like I was at home. I felt like I belonged. And it turned out that my father was an entrepreneur, that my father was building a business. He owned a bindery. And I had the opportunity to move in with him and to learn from him and to understand a little bit more about business when I was 18. Still, again, never thinking that I would be in business for myself, but it was kind of an interesting thing. I got to work in the bookkeeping department, which meant that I was the only bookkeeper. He had a tiny little business that he ended up eventually building and becoming very successful with it. So there I am. I'm 19. I meet a guy. He's 10 years older than I am. He introduces me to the business community. He came from that family I was talking about earlier, although his family was divorced, but they all had big educations. You know, he graduated from UCLA. It took him 10 years, but he graduated from UCLA. He was a musician, a partier. Anyway, so he had that UCLA graduation in political science, which I still don't know what the heck he used that for. But anyway, his sisters were teachers. His dad was a businessman. You know, his brother had a degree in business. You know, everyone was super educated. His sister was a physical therapist. They lived on a golf course. They had a beautiful 3,000 square foot custom home. I mean, everything was, you know, they drove Lexus and Mercedes Benz, and I'm like, I'm in the wrong side of the tracks. Do you understand? Like, these are not my people. I'm not supposed to be a part of these people. So, however, that was very appealing to me, very appealing to a kid who had seen just so much poverty. And oftentimes, you know, as a little girl, wondering what would be for dinner, because sometimes it was Wonder Bread, margarine, and garlic salt, because my parents chose to buy drugs instead of food. So, you know, these guys were having like filet mignon and, you know, eating at fancy restaurants, like something I just had not experienced. So when he introduced me to the business world, it was rather appealing. And I got to be introduced to a group of people who thought very different than the ones that I grew up with. That took me on a completely different path. And I mean different. I had messed around with drugs. I had given my body to too many people. I had no education. I wasn't smart. I didn't believe in myself. I didn't believe in people. I didn't trust anybody. And here I'm introduced to this totally different culture. And this totally different culture taught me a whole lot of things that set me up forever. Let me tell you what the things are that I learned. And first, let me tell you the results of what I learned. Number one, I started a business from nothing, not knowing anything about it. I failed the first 6 months because I knew nothing. I knew nothing. I made not a dime the first 6 months. But shortly after that, I met somebody that introduced me to a training, and that training taught me a few things. Number one, that anything was possible. Anything is possible. That's the first thing that I learned, that anything was possible, and it didn't matter where I came from or what my background was. So that next 6 months, after plugging into training seminars, I in fact invested $25,000 from my credit cards going to training seminar after training seminar after training seminar after training seminar. That $25,000 yielded me $50,000 in profits, which was amazing, in 6 months. Then I met and married a guy that I knew for 7 days. Biggest, stupidest decision of my whole life. How many have ever done something that dumb? Oh, there's a few of you. Yep, I met a guy in Los Angeles from Canada. I flew home with him and we got married the next week. Only to end up with my business completely embezzled, which I had it sold for $250,000. I had lost my business, $35,000 in debt, $2.03 to my name. My husband had taken off to Japan with another woman, cheated 30 days after we were married, and then again a couple months later, and left. So now I'm homeless. So I went from having a very successful business to homeless, to gaining a pound a day. How do you do that? I've got a perfect recipe for that one. If you don't know how to gain a pound a day, I can help you. It's called Häagen-Dazs Vanilla Fudge, Milky Way Dark, a bounty bar right before you go to bed. That, of course, is after you're done downing six B-52s. Yeah. And then, of course, just eat everything in sight all during the day. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, make sure you do those other things if you want to gain a pound a day. So here I'm homeless. I'm gaining a pound a day. At the end of the month, I'm 50 pounds overweight. This is now during Christmas time. I'm suicidal. I am sleeping around. I came this close to becoming a prostitute. I became this close to getting into the porn industry, hitting the rockest of all bottoms for me and completely suicidal, just wanting to end my life. Then on December 25th, a long time ago, of 1990, I heard a voice tell me while I was at the beach to pick up my mat and walk, and I did. That next day, I started a business from the trunk of my car in a payphone booth. And my first 4 days, I made $2,000 in profit. The next 30 days, I made $6,500. The next 30 days, I made over 10 grand. The next 30 days, I made over 14,000, all part-time, still working as a full-time cocktail waitress, 12-hour shifts. My 10th month, my income was over $80,000 in a single month. By the end of my second year, I made my first million. This all happened by the time I was 23. Today, I'm a multimillionaire. I've been a multimillionaire for years and years and years. Now, that doesn't mean that I haven't had some great failures, because I've had some enormous failures. And I mean enormous failures. And I'm going to share a lot of those failures with you this weekend so you don't make the same mistakes that I've made. How many of you learn better from people's failures than you do their successes? Yeah. So I'm going to scare the bejeebies out of you about my failures so you don't go down the failure path, but instead you go down the right path. Today, as a multimillionaire, man, I'm telling you, never in a million years did I ever think that I would ever be traveling around teaching and training people. Never in a million years did I think that we would have a company that would develop training programs that would be taught all over the world. Books that are best-selling books, internationally best-selling books, books that are trained by, hello, people with PhDs. They are teaching students what I wrote. If only they knew I wasn't dyslexic. If only they knew I didn't have the education they had. But books like Grooming the Next Generation for Success, First Steps to Wealth, and Spirit-Driven Success are being taught in universities in 5 different nations around the world. Little did I ever think that things like job domination, things like our communication skills, things like war on debt, which is our financial training, and our entire personal finance system would be taught all over the world. I'm telling you, Africa. These things have gone to Africa. These things have gone to all over Europe. They've gone to Russia, China, Japan, Korea, Chile, Argentina, Brazil. Are you hearing what I'm saying? All through South America, Central America, Mexico, all over the United States. These things are being used and trained all over Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all over Asia. Do you understand? All over the world. The materials that we've developed that are simply just the how-tos of how I dug myself out of being a homeless woman to making my first million and today a multimillionaire, those things have been taught everywhere all over the world. People are utilizing those trainings to help improve their finances, improve their relationships, and grow their careers. So never in a million years did I think that this kid who grew up on welfare, who was badly abused, who, hello, newsflash, was not the prom queen, but was the most unpopular kid in school, had zero friends, a sad thing, I wasn't a part of the in crowd, that now to be called upon like by Oprah Winfrey, give me a break. How do you take the least likely person to succeed and the most unpopular person in school and put her on the Oprah Winfrey show? Or on Secret Millionaire, or hundreds of interviews internationally. I've done interviews all over Europe. Do you understand? I've done interviews in Central America. In fact, I just came back from a what do you call that thing? Media tour down in Central America in front of 3 million people last summer, 2 million people through Central America. How in the world do you take the least likely to succeed abused kid who is a part of every bad statistic, welfare recipient, hello, druggy, former homeless broad who can't read, and put her books, her face, and her training materials before millions of people? That is simply just living proof that, number one, anything is possible. Yeah. Number two, if you are willing to learn a simple system, if you are willing to follow directions, if you are willing to move your ego aside and get really teachable, then anything is possible for you. How in the world do you take that kid who started there, and did I ever imagine that this would be my destiny? And to be honest with you, who cares about my destiny? My question is, what's yours? And are you willing to discover why you're here on this planet and what you were made to do? What was formed in you? There is something that's calling out of you. Why are you here this weekend? Why did you come? You didn't come because you didn't have something better to do. I'm serious. I want to know. Especially you that are brand new here this weekend for the first time. In fact, let me see your hands. If you're here for the very first time this weekend, awesome. Can you stand to your feet, please? We just want to recognize, see where you're at. Thank you so much for standing, and thank you so much for coming. Now, I know how uncomfortable it is to come into a room and come into a place that you've never been and meet a bunch of strange people. They're smiling at you and talking to you, right? See some strange broad on the stage with a dress that's entirely too tight and she's 50. I mean, this just doesn't make any sense, right? Right? You know, and you're sitting there going, oh my gosh, I'm going to listen to this broad talk for the next 3 days. Where is my refund? When is this going to end? I understand that. I understand the absolute feeling like a fish out of water, feeling like you don't belong a part of a group like this, and going, is this a cult or something? I get it. I absolutely get it. I know exactly where your mind is, because it's the same kind of things I think when I walk into a church that I'm about to speak in, that I've been invited to, going, oh crap, I'm going to be flogged. I'm going to be stoned to death. They're going to hate me. I'm going to be lynched. I'm going to be tarred. I'm going to be feathered. I get it. I hope by the time we're done together, actually just after today alone, you'll feel a little bit more comfortable, because I can see some of you are like, oh my gosh, why did I come to this thing? When is she going to talk about business? I am talking about business right now. I am actually talking about raising your income, and I'm planting some seeds inside your head to get you beyond where you're thinking right now. So for those of you that are here for the very first time, those of you that just stood to your feet, I want to know, why did you come? And please don't say my wife drug me, because that just kind of shows an imbalance in your relationship. So if she did, you might want to fix that. Anyway, so why did you come? You're here for the first time. Why did you come?
I heard a lot about it.
You heard a lot about it?
My employer, Charles, gave me a book. I read it. Intrigued me. I want to come see what it was
about. Awesome. So he said his employee, Charles, introduced him to the book, First Steps to Wealth. Yeah, First Steps to Wealth, and so he's intrigued by it, so he came. Okay, so why else are the rest of you here? Yes?
I know God has something for me, and I wanted to know what it was.
Awesome. So you're trying to find whatever it is that you feel God has for you, and somehow he's going to tell you here. Yes, ma'am. She wants to learn how to leave a legacy for her family and for her future kids. Anybody else? Why are you here? Yes, ma'am.
I think it's, I'm too short.
I'm too short. I can see you perfectly.
Well, I am following footsteps. So they are big.
Ha, ha, ha. Yes. By the time I'm done with you, you will be. If you're not there, you kind of sound like you kind of are there now. But seriously, why are you here? I hope you're not here to be entertained this weekend. I hope you're not here to try to figure me out either, because I'm still trying to figure me out. So you got to figure you out. I'm still figuring me out. So I think that's kind of a wasted idea. But you don't need another entertainer. And so if you're here to be entertained this weekend, this isn't going to work for you. But you have some kind of a need. There's something in you that said there has to be more to life than what I'm living. Was it the finances that drove you here? Of wanting to be debt-free? How many of you want to be debt-free? Yes. How many of you like to be completely debt-free? All your business debt, all your personal debt, all consumer debt, no car, no mortgage, nothing. You want to be completely debt-free. And how many of you like to live that way for the rest of your life? But bigger than that, beyond just being debt-free, because some of us, that's the only thing that we can think about right now, because the debt collectors are just breathing down our throat and we can't stand it. But what about financial independence? What if there was a way to become financially independent? And what does that actually mean? What does financial independence mean? Some of you want to be free, financially free, emotionally free, spiritually free, mentally free, physically free. How many of you want freedom in every area of your life? How many of you like to reduce the stress that you have in your life? So how many of you came here specifically because you heard about other people being able to learn some skills that reduce their stress and raise their income? So how many of you want to make more money? Okay. How many of you want to pay off debt? How many of you want a hotter marriage? If you're married already, and you have a hot marriage, there is no reason why you don't want a hotter one. Right? How many of you would like to earn the respect of your colleagues and your family and your community? How many of you would like more respect? How many of you would like more support from those that are around you? Okay, so there's a number of reasons why you came. And one thing that's real important is you identify why you're here and what you intend to get out of this weekend. If you're just coming to just see what it's all about, well, then you're going to leave the same way you left the last movie you saw. Because we read books and watch movies to see what it's all about. This is a transformational weekend if you choose to participate, if you choose to learn, if you choose to make the appropriate changes that you need to get to the places where you want to go. Because if you already knew how to be completely debt-free, you would already be debt-free. If you already knew how to reduce your stress, you would already have a reduction of stress. If you already knew how to have a hotter marriage, you would already be doing that. If you already knew how to gain more respect from your colleagues, your family, and your community, you would already be walking in it. So you have to decide, what do I want out of these next 3 days? I can't tell you how important it is for you to be very specific. One thing that you got to get leaving this weekend. One specific thing, write it down. What's the one specific thing that you got to get out of this weekend? You're here for 3 days. Please don't let it be a waste to you or to me. Don't let it be a waste. How many of you have wasted 3 days before? We all have. So I promise you, I am going to show you exactly how to get all the things that I just said and that we promised and that what Brian said that we would give you. It's up to you to apply the information. And so whether or not you're an applier of the information, we will find out based on the testimony that you send us. We'll find out. We'll find out whether or not you chose to waste your money and time this weekend, or whether or not you chose to yield the $500, the $600, the $700 bucks that you paid to get into this room. However much that was, you're going to get at least that much out and make this event pay back dividends back to you. So, how many of you are willing to learn? How many of you are willing to grow? How many of you are willing to make new decisions so that you can get what it is that you just wrote down on that piece of paper? Who here is ready to make new decisions to get yourself where you want to go? I want to share with you this morning 7 major causes of failure and 7 major causes for success. Number one, the biggest cause for failure is a lack of vision. You see, my parents had no vision. They had none. Their vision for their life was being on welfare, cheating the government, being as lazy as they possibly could, smoking as much weed as they possibly could. That was the vision for their life. And us children were a nuisance to them. We were all accidents. Do you understand? I was an unplanned pregnancy. My two sisters were unplanned pregnancies. I actually was the abortion that lived. My mom was supposed to have an abortion with me. The doctors told her that I would be retarded, deaf, and blind. And that she should abort me because of a venereal disease that she had. That she got infected with from having sex with too many people. And so they told her, your child's going to be blind, deaf, and retarded. Well, if this is what blind, deaf, and retarded looks like, I'm good. And if this is what retarded, deaf, and blind can do, I'm good. I'll sign up all day for that. So my parents lacked vision. Do you lack vision? What is the vision that you have for your life? Because successful people have vision. Successful people are driven by a vision. And the vision is bigger than themselves, and the vision is bigger than their fear. All successful people deal with fear just like unsuccessful people deal with fear. But it's that their vision that carries them beyond the fear and pushes them past that fear to where they now are accomplishing the thing that they set out to do. So if money were no object, what would you do with your life? If money was no object, what would you do with your life? If you knew you could not fail, what would you pursue? And how would you pursue it? If money were no object, and if you knew you couldn't fail, what would you pursue? What decisions would you make if you knew you couldn't fail? How would you live? Who would you live with? Where would you live? What would you do for a living? What things would you reach for? What would you want to accomplish? If failure was not an option, what would you do with your time? If you don't decide what it is that you want, somebody else will decide for you. If you don't decide what you want, and you don't decide how you want to live, if you don't live your life by design, somebody else already has a design for you. And let me prove it to you. 98% of the population of all of those wonderful educated people and non-educated people, 98% of the entire population, of all of those people who were young once and decided that they wanted to do something great with their life, and then there are those who decided they couldn't do anything great with their life, both of those populations end up in the same place. 98% of the population will end up dead or dead broke at the age of 65. Dependent on their family, friends, and federal government for their main source of income. 98% that has PhDs in it and people that didn't graduate from high school. The people who set out to do something great and the ones that set out to be lazy, guess what? Both end up in the same exact spot. Dead or dead broke at the age of 65. 2% of the population ends up successful. Now, what does that mean? No, let me just change that. Financially independent. Financial independence has actually not everything to do with how much you make every year. Because there are people in this room who have made $1 million and are flat broke. I happen to have been the first one. When I first made my million, a year later, I was flat broke. So making $1 million a year does not mean that you'll be financially free or financially independent. Not at all. In fact, I've met more people who never made a million who become financially independent by accumulating wealth little by little. But there's a certain personality that's supposed to make a whole bunch of money. But the sad thing is they end up spending the whole bunch of money. And so 2% of the population becomes financially independent by accumulating wealth little by little. Whether that's a school teacher, for example, that I am aware of, that I was in a book with. A school teacher, a 40-year-old school teacher that made $1 million as a school teacher. Wow. Why? Well, you and I both know that he didn't get paid $1 million as a school teacher, right? What did he make as a 40-year-old school teacher? Well, if he'd been a school teacher for, what, 15 years at that point? Maybe 17 years max? Because he had to go to college, he had to get his credentials, right? So he had to be around 23 before he actually started teaching. So by the time he was 40, that means 17 years later, he had amassed $1 million. Not because someone died, not because someone gave it to him, but what he learned how to do is he learned the simple formula of creating wealth little by little. How many of you would like to learn that formula? We're going to show you. You're going to get the very beginning of that formula right here tomorrow afternoon. You're going to learn the beginning steps about how to accumulate wealth little by little. It's about whether or not you're willing to learn how to do the things that even that school teacher did by the time he was 40, having $1 million. But I know lots of people who made hundreds of thousands of dollars a year versus a school teacher that's making $35,000 or $40,000 a year. And they make hundreds of thousands and they're flat broke. They got a $700,000 mortgage. They got $100,000 worth of car debt. They've got $100,000 worth of credit card debt. They've got $300,000 of back taxes. All of those people making all that money, most of them end up in the 98%. It's the Joneses that we're all trying to keep up with. And I don't know why, because they're all broke. They're broke. They finance their furniture. They finance their cars. They finance their houses. They finance their vacations. They finance their expensive date nights because they're trying to show everyone that they're more successful than they are. They finance their clothing. They finance their kids' schooling. They finance everything. And it's impossible to become financially independent if you are using debt for living. If you're using debt for living and for buying stuff, you will never become financially independent. So, 2% of the population is where you want to be, financial independence. And there's new skills that have to be learned in order. You have to retrain the way you think and the way you buy and how you see money and the value of money and where you decide to put it. 98%ers want to just be entertained. They're putting it in Netflix. They're putting it in Amazon. They're spending their time watching television or watching shows on their phones. They're spending their time wasting their life away and wasting hours upon hours upon hours away instead of using those hours to learn, instead of using those hours to grow, instead of learning those hours to gain and to move themselves ahead. They're wasting hour upon hour upon hour with simple entertainment and or gossip or social media instead of using tools to become successful. So why is that? Because 98% of the population really doesn't have a vision for their life. They have no financial plan. They have no financial vision. They have no vision even for their marriage. They have no vision for their children. They have no vision. In fact, their vision for the children is they gave birth and they're hoping for the best. That's not a vision for your children. You don't give birth and hope for the best. I mean, could you imagine a businessman going to a bank and needing to get a $100,000 loan and he's sitting down with the loan officer and saying that I'm asking, okay, so what will be your business? I'm going to start a pet shop. Okay, well, that's great. So what is your plan? Well, I just hope if you can give me this money, I could just hope for the best. You know, I'm just going to give it a try and just hope it all works out. How many of you, if you're the loan officer, you ain't giving that guy $100,000? There's no way you're not giving them $100,000. Why? Because it's completely irresponsible. Because that $100,000 is going to go to waste. And even if there is a plan, there's no guarantee that the plan is going to turn out. But the fact that there is a plan shows that there's some kind of seriousness to make it actually happen. So what's the plan that you have for your children's life? What's the vision you have for your family? What's the vision you have for your health? You see, that place where you have no vision is the place that perishes. The place that you lack vision is your greatest struggle. So if you have no vision for your marriage, that's why your marriage has a lot of conflict. If you have no vision for your family, that's why your kids are driving you crazy. If you have no vision for your job, your career, your business, that's why that thing is a thorn in your side and why it's not growing and why it's just a stress ball for you. If you have no vision for your finances, this is why you've done what many of the Joneses have done, and that is finance everything. So a man without a vision will perish. A man without a vision will perish. What is your vision? You see, it's interesting. There might be somebody in here that's selling makeup. And their vision for their business is to make a lot of money selling makeup. But see, that's not L'Oreal's vision. Their vision is to help women feel beautiful. They want to change the world by helping women feel beautiful. Those are two very different visions. It seems like L'Oreal's pretty darn successful because their vision is bigger than money. Their vision is bigger than them being the leading brand. Their vision has something to do with impacting people's lives. And their vision motivates them. So my question to you is, what is your vision? What are you going to do with the rest of the years you have with your life? Do you realize how many years you have left? I've been saying this to my husband. It's like, what are we going to do? Somebody wrote a question like, I'm 57 years old. I'm now divorced. My kids are grown. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with the rest of my life. Guess what? You're 57 years old. You have a good 40 years left. What are you going to do with it? You got 40 years left. I got 40 years left, maybe. Man, I got so much experience behind me. Kids are grown and gone. Grandkids are popping up all over. People are getting married. I'm free. I got the rest of my life. I have all these failures behind me. I have all these lists of don't do's, and I got a formula of do do's. I know how to start companies. I know how to build organizations. I know how to build a brand. I know how to help people become super successful. What are we going to do? Okay, 2 weeks from now, I'll be visiting the last city that's on my list of Europe that I've ever wanted to see, which is Prague. It's off my list. Europe is done. I'm done. What's left? Africa, South America. I've been to Asia. I've been to Africa, but I want to go deeper into those places. So what are you going to do for the rest of your life? Some of you are in your 20s. You have your entire life all ahead of you. Why are you wasting it on watching television? You have your whole life ahead of you. Please do not be like a 98%er who understands more about baseball stats than you do about the future and the life that you want to live. Please do not be like the majority of the kids that you surround yourself with that know more about celebrities than they do about their own future. Please do not be like the mediocre, average, middle America, middle Canada, middle Europe, middle Latvia, middle Russia, middle South America, Central America. Please don't be like the middle class of every country that's out there that is just wasting their life away. That they are encapsulated with entertainment instead of living out their own vision for their life and designing their life exactly how they want to live it. Because every single one of us is given that chance. Every single one of us. So the difference is that 98% of the population has no vision. So guess what? Someone else has a vision for you. And their vision for you is taking all your money and making sure you got nothing left. But no worries, they're going to offer you an 18.9% credit card so you can get some more. So that you can buy some more junk that you don't need. Junk that you have to store. Junk that you have to organize. Junk that you have to clean. That's their vision for your life. So if you don't get a vision for your life, guess what? Somebody else already has one written for you. They have already got, you are a demographic. You are a statistic to them, and they are after your money. They're after your children's money. They're after your children's 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 money. And the government's at the top of the list. They are. They're at the top of the list. We can get a nice big discussion about that. I can prove that one to you. So, lack of vision. Number two. 98% of the population has lots of excuses and little results. But 2% of the population has the ability, has the skill set to overcome their excuses, to overcome their circumstances, and produce results even in a mess. That's what 2% of the population has the ability to do. Now, how many of you can learn new skills? All of us can learn new skills. But see, the difference is that most people after high school or college have not learned a new thing. They're still using the same skill that they had from years ago and just trying to repeat that again and again. I'm sorry to tell you, but the world is ever changing. The market is ever moving. And if you're not learning and growing with the market, you will not succeed. You end up in that 98%. So 98% of the population has lots of excuses. Let me show you how that goes. Let's combine both of these two things together. We were talking about vision, right? Now, when you were younger, you had some vision. Okay, when you graduated from high school, how many of you were like, I'm going to go, bam. Tell me what you were going to go do. Someone says travel, okay? You wanted to travel. Did you have a specific place you want to travel to? Give me a specific place some of you want to travel to. Thailand. Yes, it's on our list. We'll be there for our 25th wedding anniversary. Say again. Bora Bora, Australia. Australia's gorgeous. Been there 7 times. Bora Bora. Used to own a house right on, the most beautiful house in all of Bora Bora was our house. We sold it to a billionaire who now owns the most beautiful house in Bora Bora. Okay. After we did. They were second. They were after us. Beautiful private beach, amazing house from the foundation all the way up, mahogany, absolutely stunning, quiet, gorgeous water, looking at the island of Bora Bora. Okay, where else do you want to travel to? Paris, beautiful, filthy city, great food, wonderful bread, amazing dessert, lots of graffiti. Iceland, amazing, gorgeous, phenomenal place. Y'all got to go to Iceland at least one time in your life. It's like you're in a different world. It's a totally different planet. Same with Bora Bora, same with Israel. Those are the high. Those are like the creme de la creme of places to travel to. Bora Bora, you'll be blown away of the beauty. Iceland, blown away by the beauty and the diversity of that place. Same with Israel. Amazing place. In fact, there's a group of us going to Israel in March for a couple of weeks. It's going to be amazing. Okay, so those are some places that you wanted to travel to, right? Have you been there yet? Why not? Someone says income. Okay. All right. So hold on to that thought. Okay. No, I haven't been to those places yet. How long have you wanted to travel? How long have you wanted to go to those places? How many of you say you wanted to go to some of these places for a really long time? Okay. And how many of you say, well, I've always wanted to go. Okay. Do you know why you haven't been yet? This is why. Excuses why you haven't traveled to the places you want to go yet. You've actually had the money, and through this weekend, you're going to see where all the money has gone. And when we lack vision, somebody else's vision for our money comes into play. And now, instead of traveling to Greece, Italy, Paris, Iceland, Bora, Ireland, Scotland, Argentina, Brazil, China, instead of traveling to Thailand, instead of traveling to Bali, instead of traveling to Mexico, South America, Central America, instead of traveling to Brazil, we pay this monthly fee of $97 a month for the Travel Channel and 256 other channels. Whereas if you added up that money that you're paying for your Dish satellite and all those little extras, within 2 years' time, there is all of the expenses you need to travel to one of those places. Yeah, check that out. But where a 98%er lacks vision, they perish. The vision dies with them in the grave. So what else did you want to do when you were young that you said that you wanted to do, places you want to go? Listen, forget the places. How did you want to live? You want to stay in your tiny, smelly, molded apartment for the rest of your life? Big house. Someone says a big house. Did you hear her? That was a big house. Okay. Now let me ask you, you wanted to get out of that molded apartment. What did you want to drive? Ferrari, baby. Okay. You don't want to still keep your Honda Civic. Right? So are you going to, you know, pull up your rusted Honda Civic up to your big house? Huh? No, ma'am. You wanted to drive a Ferrari, right? Okay, so you figured out, you knew where you wanted to live. You knew what kind of a car you want to drive, the places you want to travel. Okay, what else? How did you want to dress? Huh? You didn't want to wear a $20 dress, did you? You men didn't want to wear a suit from JCPenney, now did you? You guys didn't want Walmart jeans, did you? Come on, tell me. What did you want? Ooh, baby. That man's got some taste over there. He says, I want Gucci. I want Gucci. All right, so you want to be able to shop, boom, ba-ba-boom, ba-boom, right? Big dollar shopping sprees, okay? All right, so house, car, travel. Whoa, why do you want a yacht? Because your friends don't, right? That's why you want a yacht, okay? So wait a second, someone said a jet. Shoot, well, Danny, now we're at it. Let's keep talking about it, okay? Anything else? What else did you want to do? You were 18 years old. You had all these things. Say what? I can't hear you, son. Yeah, what kind? Come on, dude. What kind of motorcycle are you talking about, boy? Listen. Nothing becomes dynamic until it becomes specific. Nothing becomes dynamic until it becomes specific. I'm going to say it again until all of you have written it down. Nothing becomes dynamic until it becomes specific. Say it with me. Nothing becomes dynamic until it becomes specific. What kind of a motorcycle? Ducati. You said it, baby. Woo! The ultimate of crotch rockets. Okay? So here, you want to travel. You said where you want to go. You want a big house. Where's the big house? What about another house to go to? And where is that house? Huh? She says a lake. Someone says on an island. Someone says on a beach, right? Oh, Alaska. Beautiful place. Beautiful place. Yes, that's awesome. You got a Ducati for the weekends. You got a yacht for the weekend. You got a jet to take you to Bora Bora. Okay. You're driving to work, whatever work is, right? How many of you wanted to be famous? Come on, be honest. Okay. She wants her own reality show. You want to be famous. Famous. Okay. So look, these are all these things that you said that you want to do. And then here's the question, why aren't you doing it yet? I'm going to show you why you ain't doing it yet. Because there's a whole nother thing that goes along with this. And this is called your income. In proportion to the expense of all of the things you said you wanted to do, you graduated from high school or college and you got some money. Bam. And as soon as you started to get some money, what did you do with the money? What? What did you spend it on? Spend it on McDonald's. You spent it on Starbucks. What else did you spend it on? Spotify. Netflix. Come on, you older people. You know exactly where you spent your money. You younger people, you're spending it there right now. Drugs. We got an honest one in the house. What about the beer? What about the beer? We spent it on partying, right? We spent it on friends. We spent it on entertainment, right? This little bit of money that we earned, okay, whether it was $10 an hour or $20 an hour, eventually we got it up maybe to $100 an hour. Where did the money go? Did it go here? No. It went to someone else's vision. It went to someone else's vision. Starbucks has a vision for your money, about $200 a month. Yep, that's their vision, is to get $200 a month of your cash. Yeah, that's it right there. That's just for you. If you've got kids, they want $400 a month. Seriously. The cell phone company had a vision for your money. They all have a vision for your money. So when this money... You were given this. This is what you did eventually. Eventually, years go by. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years go by. And you found the piece of paper where you wrote these things out that you said you wanted to do with your life. Now, all of a sudden, you got 2.3 kids, which means this is almost a negative. Okay? Now, I know some of you are like, Danny, no, my income was bigger than that. I graduated with a PhD. Well, it's gone now. Because now you've got a major debt tied to it and can't find a job because it's most people with a PhD today, or many. Okay, so you've got your income. What 2% of the population does is they focus on growing that income and they direct that income to learn to invest to pay for these things. 98% of the population lets this money leak out to everything they never wanted because someone told them they should want it versus going after using it and pointing it in this direction, one thing at a time. As well as 98% of the population then after about 5 years just finds a million excuses, and this is what happens to their vision. They're like, oh, travel, man, that would be great, but, you know, I got these two kids now, and, you know, I only get 2 weeks off worth of work, and the garage needs to be organized, and, you know, we got to go to Wisconsin for our, you know, yearly, got to go to Wisconsin for our yearly family reunion, you know, where my cousins from Minnesota bring the tapioca, and, you know, and... You know, I've got some cousins in Detroit and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan. You know, so Michigan, we all have our family reunion by the lake every year. So we rent the Winnebago and we drive up there and we're there for the total travel time, including the time there, we're there for a week. And we have to do that every year because if I don't show up to the family reunion 1 year, man, I'm going to be ostracized. So I have to. So therefore, travel. Maybe I'll do that when I'm old and decrepit and have a walker. When I'm retired and I have to live on less than half of the income I couldn't make it on during my life. And somehow net, then I'll be able to travel. But it's okay, Danny, because, you know, my wife and I, we've got the Travel Channel. We both have our own Lazy Boy chairs. We've got this big remote control. We sit down every night and we watch the Travel Channel. It's our wonderful little date. And we have explored Australia. We've explored Greece. We've gone to Italy. I mean, really, it's almost like this virtual thing. I can almost smell the food. They're so good at what they do. I'm just like, feel like I've experienced it. It's amazing. So travel, I mean, you know, Wisconsin is where we travel. Having a big house, oh, that would be fabulous. Fabulous. That would be wonderful. But who's going to clean it? And houses these days are so expensive. The only way I'll be able to have a big house is if I move way out in the middle of like South Dakota or something where nobody wants to live. Houses is cheap. Or, you know, somewhere in the middle of Oklahoma. I mean, who wants to live in Oklahoma, Danny? I know I can get a big house in Oklahoma, but, you know, is South Dakota or Oklahoma? I mean, what jobs are in the middle of Oklahoma? I mean, you can't live in the city of Oklahoma. Any of cities, I mean, so where am I going to work if there's just no way, you know, and not only that, but insurance. And then if I had a big house, it means I have to fill the house. I can't bring my furniture from college into a nice big house. A Ferrari, really? Do you know what happens with people who have Ferraris? When they go to Walmart, they have to park in the nosebleed section. Not only that, who in the world would ever want a Ferrari? There is not a single highway in this country that allows me to drive a Ferrari the way a Ferrari was built to be driven. The speed limit in California is 50 frickin' 5. That's first gear. How in the world am I supposed to drive a Ferrari? Texas, they let you go 75 miles an hour. Okay, we just busted into second gear. Like, why would I ever want one? Not only that, jealous people, you know what they do with it? They key your car at Walmart. So I'd have to park way at the end of the parking lot. I'd have to cover my car just to go get toilet paper. I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's not only that, I have a buttload of kids. I mean, a boatload. I have a boatload of kids. I mean, it's just not practical. It's not feasible. It's not practical. Okay, shop with lots of money. Oh, man, that would be really amazing. But China is selling a lot of things on Amazon Prime right now. And it's free shipping there and back. So, I mean, those things look great. I mean, why in the world would I ever need to do that? You know what I'm into now? Is thrifting. If you go thrifting in, like, Los Angeles, you're buying a $5,000 suit for $25. So that's a pretty cool thing. A yacht? Wow. Well, first of all, you know what? We're just not those kind of people. Just not. We're just not that kind of people. You know, those people, you know, if you have a yacht, you gotta wear white. You gotta wear those yacht clothes. Those yacht clothes are just ugly. I mean, who likes that anyway? All that flowy stuff and linen and, I mean, who needs that? White. I live in Texas, and you can't keep white white. So it's just impractical. You know, and you can't even ensure that. What if it sinks? Right? What would happen if it sinks? I mean, that would suck. So, you know, we have, my neighbor, he has one of those, you know, aluminum boats that fits the two of us. We like to go fishing. You know, it has that motor. You know what I'm talking about? That one. Okay? We take that out a couple times a month. Sometimes we catch something. Sometimes we don't. But, I mean, who needs a yacht? You know, our little murky brown lake is great. I like it. I love it. A jet? Why in the world would I ever have a jet when Southwest flies sometimes for $75 one way and everyone is first class? Do you have any idea how much a jet costs? You have any idea? It's like millions of dollars for a jet. I got other places to spend. Well, not $1 million, but... A Ducati? Okay, now, first of all, it's not very responsible. I mean, they're very nice-looking bikes. I could probably get one for like $20,000. But, you know, I got kids. And, you know, what if I get into an accident? And, you know, if I get into an accident, then what's going to happen with my wife and my children? And then, you know, we're going to be further in debt because I'd have to stop working. And, you know, it's just not really feasible and responsible. I mean, when I was young, maybe, but, like, I'm not young anymore. I've got this broad that's nagging at me 24/7. She wants to buy new shoes again. And if I have any expectation of getting any, I better let her buy the shoes. Be famous? Wow. I don't know the right people. I don't have the right connections. There's too much competition in the famous world. You know, I wouldn't know how to get my foot in the door. You know, we're just simple blue-collar worker people. I mean, it's people like us, we don't ever become famous, you know. So, you know, in our family, we're welfare recipients. You know, welfare recipients don't become famous. And, you know, and we were dumb, you know. No one went to college in our family, you know. So people don't become famous that don't have a college degree. And, you know, none of us have any specific talent, you know. We weren't born with any talent. So if you don't have talent, you're not going to become famous. You know, and not only that, but I did drugs, so I can't become famous. Like, that will all come out one day. I slept around a lot of people. I can't become famous. You know, famous people don't sleep around with a lot of people. This becomes the focus. Excuses instead of the vision. Excuses become the focus instead of the vision. So what's your excuse? The definition of an excuse is a well-planned lie. What's your excuse as to why you haven't even forged a vision? What's the excuse as to why you haven't even tried? No, Danny, I tried once. I tried twice. The last time I checked, Edison tried how many times to create that light bulb? How many? 2,000? 10,000? 10,000 tries. 10,000 tries. 10,000 tries. How many tries did the guys who developed the airplane try? Think about it, man. They had a vision of flying. People thought they were cuckoo. Who would ever trust these numbskull, weirdo, risk-taking dreamers who need to get a real job? To take a people up in the air and fly through the air. How many tries did it take them? What about Marconi, who developed wireless communication? Imagine when there was no wireless communication, no telephones, no cell phones, no internet, no wireless communication, no radio communication. Are you listening to me? And imagine some cuckoo going, I have a vision. He hasn't slept for days. He's got greasy hair. I have a vision. I think I could talk to someone across the world from here. A thousand. Yeah, it was 1,000. Could you imagine? Those people had vision. And they didn't quit after the first try. The second, the third, the fourth, the fifth. And your vision is nowhere near the size. That vision up there is nowhere near the size of inventing a light bulb, having man fly. Your vision is nowhere near the concept of wireless communication. What about the ones who invented the car? How many of you, your vision is not that big? But did they quit after the first failure? No, because 2% of the population understands that failure is feedback and it's not the end of the story. Failure is feedback and it's not the end of the story. It's the beginning of the story. But 98% of the population lives their life according to their excuses. The excuse of, I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too tall, I'm too skinny, I don't have enough education, or I have too much education, I'm too young, I'm too old. What's your excuse as to why you have not gone after the things that you said you wanted 2 years ago? You see, that dream that was birthed in you as a young person is still alive. The difference between you and 2% of the population is 2% of the population is willing to pay whatever the price is to learn the skill, to develop the knowledge that they need in order to achieve the vision that they have. Yes. 98% of the population is distracted. Yeah. Is surrounded by other excuseaholics. Who has used failure as their crutch to not try again. Every 2%er has gone through the angst, the anxiety, the animosity of failure. And they have all dealt with fear the same way you have dealt with fear. They've all had bad circumstances enter their life the same way you've had bad circumstances enter your life. The difference between the two is that 2% of the population uses the circumstances as feedback on how to get ahead. But 98% of the population sits back in their lazy boy chair and gives up. What will you do? What's your excuse that is holding you back? What thing are you blaming as to why you are not where you desire to be? It is nobody else's fault but your own. Number three, the third biggest cause of failure is a lack of specialized knowledge and specialized skill. Specialized knowledge, specialized skill. Versus 2% of the population who is continuously investing into those areas, continuously investing into specialized knowledge and specialized skill. Let's talk about a doctor, a nurse, and a brain surgeon. Doctor, nurse, brain surgeon. What is the difference between a nurse, a doctor, general MD, and a brain surgeon? It's levels of education, is it not? It's specialized knowledge and specialized skill. Who makes the most money between a nurse, a general MD, and a brain surgeon? Why does the brain surgeon make more money? Because they have specialized knowledge and specialized skill. What do you specialize in? Gossip? What do you specialize in? Gossip? Celebrity gossip? What do you specialize in? Baseball stats, football stats, basketball stats? What do you specialize in? Facebook? Watching television? Is that your specialty? What's your specialty? Do you specialize in hatred? Do you specialize in excuses? Do you specialize in judgment of other people? Do you specialize in your insecurities? What do you specialize in? How do you know? Look at your fruit. Look at the fruit in your life. Do you specialize in blame? Everybody else is at fault as to why you are not where you want to be? Is it because your 5 customers do not return back to you? Is it because your employees are not committed and you can't find good talent? What's your excuse? What do you specialize in? Do you specialize in problems or do you specialize in solutions? So the difference between a nurse, a doctor, and a brain surgeon is simply that brain surgeon was willing to take the risk to invest into his education longer than everybody else was. He was willing to take the risk and to spend more money in learning and more time than the nurse was. The nurse's vision was just to be a nurse making $7.15 an hour. The nurse that had a little bit bigger vision, man, she might have became an RN, now makes $60,000 a year in the OR, the operating room. But could that same person have gone to medical school and become a doctor? How many of you say yes? Absolutely. Did that same person have the same opportunity to go to college longer than the nurse did? Do they have the same opportunity? Let me see a show of hands. Yeah. How many of you think no, they didn't have the same opportunity? BS. You know how many college students that came from a poor family that became doctors? Plenty of them. You know how many of them worked 2 jobs while they were in school? So they did not rack up a whole bunch more debt that they did that was unnecessary? What about the brain surgeon? Every doctor that went to school to become a general MD had the same opportunity as a brain surgeon, as a neurologist, as, hello, an orthopedic surgeon. They all have the same opportunity. The difference is who limits who. The nurse limited herself. The MD limited himself. The brain surgeon went all the way. So where are you limiting yourself? The human mind has the capacity to learn anything. Anything. The human mind has the capacity to be filled with specialized knowledge and skill. What you choose to put in your mind is exactly what you're going to get out of it. Exactly what you get out of it. Before I take you there. When I asked what you specialize in, I'm going to tell you what I was taught to specialize in 29 years ago. You ready? Was to specialize in people. I was told if I learn more about people than I did my product, than my service, if I learn more about people than I did even about business, if I learn more about people than I learned about anything else, then I would be unusually successful. And it came to be true. It came to be true. Every business is the people business. You build people, people build a business. You treat your customer right, they come back to you. You find out what the public wants and you give it to them, they come back to you and they start telling everybody else about you. The issue is that a lot of people think they have good people skills. How do you know if you have good people skills? Look at your fruit. Your fruit tells you whether or not you're good with people. If you're judgmental, you ain't good with people. If you're prejudiced, you suck with people. I'm not kidding you. You suck with people. You are narrow-minded. And you've cut off a certain part of the populace because of your insecurities and your prejudices. You cut off a certain part of the market. So for example, I was molested when I was 3 years old by a Hispanic man. Then when I'm 18, I find out I am what? Hispanic. I hated Hispanics. And then my father is, hello, I can still to this day barely understand my dad. It's been 30 years that we have been together. And dad, boat and vote is the same word. It's the same word. Any word that starts with B or V is the same exact word. So it's like, I have to translate in my head what he is actually saying. So here I was prejudiced against Hispanics, and I was one. And until I broke that ridiculous, immature, rooted in a painful childish experience, I would not do business, work with, and I wouldn't hang out with and didn't want anything to do with them. I will eat their food. This is the best food on the planet right there, man. It's the best food on the planet. But what did I do? I cut off a huge part of the market. In fact, I cut off a viral part of the market because of my prejudices that was rooted in my past. If I had not broken that, do you know I have spoken before millions of Hispanics? I've spoken with governments that run the countries in Central America. Been face to face with the president of Honduras. Do you understand what I'm saying? Top government officials that are what? Hispanic. I would have no influence in those places if I was prejudiced. If I was judgmental, I would have no influence in that place. So learn more about people than you do anything else, and you'll become unusually successful. And work harder on you and how you deal with people. Work harder on you than you do your staff. Work harder on you than you do your distributors. Work harder on you than you do your spouse. Work harder on you than you work on your kids. Work harder on you than you work on anything else, and you'll become unusually successful. My fourth and final point. Is a lack of belief. 98% of the population lives in disbelief. 2% of the population lives by faith. Why the heck won't this freaking chair move? There we go. Okay. Lack of belief, 98%. They walk by faith, 2% of the population. 2% of the population has a mountain-moving faith. 98% of the population looks at the mountain and says, I'm too tired. I don't think we can. I've tried before. It didn't work. I don't have what it takes. Somebody else go do it, please. I'm not good enough. I'm not qualified. I have back issues. I have knee problems. I have hip problems. I'm too old. I've passed my time to be able to climb that mountain. Any of you ever hear these things before? So 98% of the population lives in fear of making mistakes, lives in fear of rejection, fear that it's not going to happen, fear that they're going to waste money, fear that they're going to waste time. 98% of the population stays stuck largely because of fear. And I have a question for you. Is your fear halting your company's growth? Is your fear halting your family's growth, your financial growth? Is your fear halting your physical growth? Is your fear stopping your employees from growing? Is your fear stopping your sales force from growing? Is your fear stopping other people's dreams from coming to pass? Are your dreams hindering another human being from dreaming? Is your fear hindering somebody else from dreaming? Have you put your fear on your kids like your parents put their fear on you? Have you taken your fear and passed it on to the next generation? Have you taken your fear and passed it on to your friends? Are you a spreader of fear or are you a spreader of faith? Take a 15-minute break. Let's go. Let's get in them seats and let's get started. Okay. Hope you had a nice break. Shocking. On my break, I had a wonderful opportunity to meet some really precious people that are here for the first time. Hope to get the chance to meet all of you that are here for the first time. We really appreciate that you came, especially our grads. I really want you to get to know the ones who've graduated. In fact, this young man right here in the front has graduated from this event 12 straight years in a row. 12 straight years in a row, meaning every single event. And back in the early days, we did it every 4 weeks. And there was a couple seasons of every 2 weeks when we had a different type of event that was in there too, Prospect and Closure Rate of Millions. So he's been incredibly committed. So he has seen a lot of people come through these events. He's made huge investments to get here today. He's debt-free, including his mortgage. You'll hear more from him at another time throughout the weekend. But there's a lot of people in here. Those of you who are here for the first time, you want to meet as many of the grads as possible and hear their stories. Ask them what their story is, because it'll shock you and impart faith into you. Because faith comes from hearing. Comes from hearing and hearing testimony of great things that have happened in other people's lives, and it just spurs you on to know that you can. So we talked about this morning. Here's what I had promised. Wow, Roman, you look amazing. You are so sharp. I love it. By the way, for those of you who, this is your first time, that's our son. That's my son, Roman. Yes. He is now 20 years old, and he is 6 days away from being married. Yeah. 6 days away from being married to that beautiful girl behind the camera, right over there. Her name is Rachel. On the 20th, next Friday, they'll be tying the knot. They have very responsibly have been dating each other, have maintained each other's purity, protected each other's honor, have not touched each other inappropriately, saved themselves for marriage, which is awesome. Giving the best gift they could give to their spouse. The one gift, there's only one shot that you got at that purity thing, one shot that you got at your virginity, and so they've kept that, unlike his parents. Do you hear me? Anyway, Hans and I were 18 and 22 when we biblically were married. 26 and a half years ago. What do I mean by that? We conceived a child when he was 18 and I was 22. That child is now 25 and a half, almost 26 actually. Anyway, so they did it opposite of us, and I'm so very grateful for that. So this is what we talked about so far. Remember earlier when you first came into the room, I asked you what you wanted, right? I asked you why you came to this event. I asked you what brought you here. What specific need do you have that needs to get filled while you're here, right? And I also made a promise to you that I was going to show you the things that were hindering your life, that were standing in the way of you being more successful and becoming debt-free, standing in the way of you going after some of those dreams and things that you've always wanted to do, but that you have pulled back on and given up on. How many have already discovered some of those things already? Okay. We talked about four simple things. Do you remember what number one was? A lack of vision. How many of you found out that you have not much of a vision? How many of you are lacking vision in your marriage? And how many of you say, oh, I'm going to ask that one again. How many of you are lacking vision in your marriage? Okay. So can you see why it goes nowhere? Why it becomes boring? Why it becomes ho-hum? Why it becomes okay? If there's no vision for it, you just then slide through life like everybody else, right? What was number two? Excuses, right? So versus 2% of the population that has the same kind of circumstances we all do, but they have developed the skill and the ability of what? Overcoming those things. And all of us can learn a new skill. Number three, lack of specialized knowledge and specialized skill. 2% of the population has what? Specialized knowledge and specialized skill. How many of you found that you have specialized knowledge just in the wrong place? Right? How many of you have some specialized skills, just not in the place or the direction of your vision? Okay. And number four, lack of belief. Are you one that is allowing your fear to hurt other people, stunt other people's growth? Is your fear stopping your company growth, stopping your financial growth? Is your fear stopping your relationship growth? How many of you could be honest and say that, yes, I've allowed fear to stop the growth in my life? So what does that mean? Flip the switch. You've got to build your faith. And this weekend, you must build your faith. If you do nothing else besides build your faith, and you're going to do that by meeting all these different grads who are here. They all have a story. They're all on a journey. They're all going towards their destiny. They've just started before you. That's it. Because they graduated from First Steps before you did. Okay, so now let's get into the last two, the last three points for the seven biggest causes of failure and the seven biggest causes of success. The difference between 98 and 2% of the population. Number five, okay? And by the way, this next segment that we're going to talk about, this next hour is going to be the most important hour of your entire life up to this point. This next hour, depending on what you choose to pull out of it and what you choose to put into it, will determine how far and how fast you go. This next 60 minutes is by far the most important out of anything I'm going to talk about for the rest of the weekend. This is actually what sets the foundation. This is actually what sets you up for the proper decisions that need to be made moving your life forward. This is not the time to go to sleep. This is not the time to be thinking, when is she going to get to the good stuff? This right here is the very core of all the good stuff that is either stopping you from success, and if you choose to flip it over, it will propel you into great success. So number five is a burning desire. 2% of the population has a burning desire. 98% of the population has no desire. 98% of the population has killed, crushed, smoked out their desire with entertainment. They have smoked out, they've crushed, they've buried their desire with distraction of social media. They have buried their desire, the burning desire that every human being was born with. They have covered it up with past failures. They've covered it up with past pain. They've covered it up with trashy novels, celebrity magazines. They've covered it up with their ball games. They've covered it up with meaningless entertainment. Pornography, alcohol addictions, drug addictions, shopping addictions. That's what they've covered up their burning desire with. So what is on top of your burning desire? Where did it go? What have you traded it for? Because you were born with everything it takes. When you were knitted together in your mother's womb, and you were designed by the great designer of all designers, and when your very DNA was put together, there were five things that was imparted into your DNA that it's impossible to succeed without these five things. Number one is enthusiasm. The word enthusiasm, the root word in the Greek is enthusias. Enthusias means to be God-like. Now, I know that there's a certain percentage of us here in the room that we believe we were created in his image. Then why don't you act like it? You are created in his image. You actually say you believe that. Then why do you walk in fear? You are created with a destiny attached to your life. And it calls out to you every day of your life. Hallelujah. You were born with enthusiasm. Do you remember when you used to get excited about conquering new things? Do you remember when you used to get excited about dreaming, maybe even creating a dream board? Do you remember when you thought that nothing was impossible? Do you remember when you were excited to get up in the morning, that you couldn't wait? Do you remember? Let's go back to Christmas. Do you remember at Christmas time, the month of December, what was your behavior like? Tell me. What's your name? David? That's a great name. the name of a great king that once walked the earth, who is a man of faith, a conqueror, a warrior, a businessman, and he liked to sing and songwrite on the side. It's a lot of talent. David, can you remember what your behavior was like when you were a child in the month of December? It's December 1st. What's coming? Right after Thanksgiving, what's coming around the corner?
Christmas.
And how would you act? He said, I acted like an angel. And I bet his mother and father agreed that he acted like an angel. That if David had a sibling, a sister or a brother, he made sure he didn't pull on her pigtail, and he made sure he didn't trip his brother when his brother came running down the hall. He made sure he wasn't blowing spitballs at class. He made sure he actually was getting his homework done and doing it on time. He made sure that he wasn't poking his friend during class. He wasn't provoking anybody in class, but he was sitting there. He says, I was an angel. Who else in the room was an angel in December? And why were you an angel in December? Tell me why you were an angel in December. Because you believed that some big fat guy from the North Pole with a size 64-inch waist knew whether or not you were naughty or nice. You believed some big fat guy with a red suit knew your thoughts, knew your actions, and knew what your desires were. So you changed your behavior so that you could get what you wanted. You believed that some big fat guy up in the sky was going to come on Christmas Eve. And this 64-inch waist somehow is going to fit into a chimney you don't even have. You live in Florida or Miami. You never, ever asked the question, how is he going to fit? You never asked the question as to whether or not he was real. You never even asked the question whether or not he knew what your heart desire was. Never asked the question. But you woke up with absolute enthusiasm. So where did your enthusiasm go? And where did the angel go? Where'd it go? Did you trade your enthusiasm for the fear of disappointment? Did you change your excitement in exchange for the fear of being discouraged? Did you give up excitement for and grab the fear of something not working instead? How many of you made the trade? How well is it working for you? Did you make the trade for a guarantee that if I don't get excited, then I won't get discouraged? If I don't get excited, then I won't be disappointed. If I don't get excited, well, then I won't have my bubble popped when it doesn't work. I have a question for you. Did it work? How many of you made that trade that you've gotten less excited so that you wouldn't get discouraged? How many of you still deal with the discouragement? How many of you still been disappointed? So you cheated yourself. I much rather enjoy being enthusiastic and still have the risk of being discouraged and disappointed than not enjoy enthusiasm and still live a life full of discouragement and disappointment. The second thing that you were wired with that was put in your DNA was the gift of persistence. The gift of persistence. How many of you asked your mother or your father for something you knew the answer was no? Oh, let me just try that again. How many of you asked for something and you knew the answer was no? Raise your hand. Look around the room. Look at all these people asked for something they knew the answer was no. But why did you ask? She says, I'm breaking them down. Breaking them down. Come on, tell me why you ask. Because I want it. I might get lucky, she says. Why did you keep asking for it? They can only say no so many times. How many of you, you were even threatened, your life was threatened that if you ask me again, I'm going to beat you of an inch of your life? How many of you heard that? And how many of you asked again? So the question I have for you is, what happened to your persistence? What did you do with your persistence? What did you trade your persistence for? A comfortable life? Did you trade your persistence for just a comfort zone? Your comfort zone is your disaster zone. Your comfort zone, the next step after a comfort zone is death. Life doesn't get birthed in a comfort zone. Disasters get birthed in a comfort zone. Procrastination is in a comfort zone. Fear is in a comfort zone. It's your disaster zone. And yet 98% of the population is working hard to become comfortable. What did you do with your persistence? It is in you. It's been wired in you. Dust it off, polish it up, and start using it again. You know how to go after something that someone said no. You know how to get what you want. You practiced it for a good 18, some of you 23 years. Number three, the third thing that you were born with that was wired in you was the gift of adventure. Yeah, the desire for adventure, the exhilaration of adventure, and the anguish of adventure. What did you do with your adventure? You have an adventurous spirit. Every human was born with it. Yes, some more than others, but we were all born with an adventurous spirit. What happened to yours? Think about where all of us would be in our lives today if adventurous people were not adventurous. Many of you would not have been born in this country because it was the adventure that caused them to move here for freedom. So tell me, where's your adventure? How many of you, when you were younger, jumped off of the top bunk across the room to the other bed? Okay. How many of you climbed a building? How many of you snuck out at night from the second story down? How many of you stole a car that night and went and visited somebody before you had? David was not an angel that day. He was not an angel. That was not December, man. That was July. I had a long time to go. Okay. How many of you ate a worm because someone triple dog dared you? How many of you climbed the tallest tree and then swayed left to right, left to right? How many of you toilet papered your high school? Yes. How many of you TP'd the principal's car? Yes. So my question to you is, when was the last time you had a pillow fight? When was the last time you jumped out of an airplane? When was the last time you did something fun, you boring adults? And you can't figure out why your kids never want to grow up. And what did you do with your given adventure? Did you trade it for some video games? Did you trade it for a movie that's an adventurous movie? That instead of being James Bond, you like to watch James Bond? Did you pay to stay comfortable in that nice air-conditioned place to watch every fantasy that you want to see instead of living the life of the fantasy? What did you do with your adventurous spirit? Well, 98% of the population pays for entertainment to give it a jolt. Oh, I feel that. Ooh, ha, ha! You go to an amusement park so you can feel the exhilaration? Instead of living a life of exhilaration, living a life on the edge of risk, guess what's the edge of risk? Taking risk is exhilarating. It's exciting and it's scary. It's really scary. When was the last time you took a risk? 98% of the population does everything they can not to take risks. They look for guarantees. 98% of the population is dead or? Hello? I can't hear you. At the age of? And those are people who make a lot of money and those who don't. That 98% includes people who make millions of dollars, by the way. I know someone who made $11 million in their 40s and died broke. Died broke and was broke the last 10 years, 15 years of their life. 25. Last 25 years of their life, they're flat broke. After making $11 million. How many think that sucks? You have to learn what they refused to learn. You have to develop the skill that they refused to develop. Yeah. Number what? Is the gift to get over it. It's the gift to get over it. You were born. You were wired. Your DNA has the gift to get over it. What does that mean? Yeah, but my brother, he did this to me when I was a kid. Shut up and get over it. You are not 12 anymore. You see, 98% of the population lives in the past and lets the past dictate their future, which means they're just on repeat. They ain't even living. The gift to get over it is you fall down, you scrape the skin off of your knees, and you get back up and you run again. But 98%ers, as they age, not mature, as they age, they get more and more bitter, more and more angry, more and more closed-minded. As they age, they get more and more resentful. As they age, they get more and more hardened, more and more stubborn. That's the life of a 98%er. And more isolated, and more depressed, and more foolish decisions that they make because they're letting their past dictate their future. 2% of the population refuses to let that happen. They refuse to stay the same. They refuse to stay stuck. They refuse to let their past get them down. They use the failures of their past as feedback and not the end of the story. They use the failure and the mistakes and the pain from the past to propel them into a great future. So what will you do? The last and final thing that you were born with, we already touched on. We've touched on it twice. I'm going to ask the question again. Why was David an angel in the month of December? Why did he not steal a car in the month of December, but instead in July? David really didn't steal a car. I'm just playing on with him. He said, I snuck out and stole a car. So it's a humble man. Okay, it is. That's a humble man. Okay, listen. Why did we change our behavior? Because we were born with the gift of faith. And faith changes behavior. Faith changes behavior. Faith changes the mind in a nanosecond. Faith changes the heart in a nanosecond. Faith changes your reality in a nanosecond. That you can go from depressed to excited and exhilarated and hopeful about life in a second when there's an impartation of faith. That when you choose to believe, everything follows your belief. Everything. If you don't believe, everything follows that. If you do believe, everything follows that. You're limited by your belief system. So what are your beliefs that you're entertaining, that you're coddling, that you're feeding? Are you feeding the belief that you're not good enough? Are you feeding the belief that you were a mistake? Are you feeding the belief that you were never supposed to be born? Are you feeding the belief that you're not qualified? Are you feeding the belief that you're never going to amount to anything? Are you feeding the belief that you're fat, ugly, stupid, and can't do anything right? Are you feeding the belief that you have failed too much, therefore you will never succeed? Are you feeding the belief that your family's broke, so you're going to be broke? Are you feeding the belief that you're not smart enough? You're not good enough? You don't know the right people? Or are you going to feed the belief that, yes, I can? That it doesn't matter where I come from. It doesn't matter where I've been. It doesn't matter how many times I've been knocked down. I'm still going straight up to the top. Because what you feed will flourish. What you neglect will die. What you feed will flourish. What you neglect will die. So if you feed your vision will prosper. If you neglect your vision, it will die. For goodness sakes, the proof is you believe that a bunny laid plastic eggs. You believed that there was some fairy from Wonder Wonderland knew that when your tooth was a-wiggling, so much so that you tied dental floss to your tooth, you tied the other side to the door, and you slammed the door. As soon as you figured out that you got a quarter or a buck or $5, inflation's crazy with the tooth fairy, then you figured out, wow, what if I could do some more? I want to buy a baseball. How much is it? I need 4 tooth gone. You became a business person at 4, 5, and 6. Why? Because it's natural for you to do that. That's why. But as we get older, we either choose the path of a 98%er or we choose to stay on the 2% path we were born on. Did you hear what I just said? All 5 of those things that you were born with are all 5% characteristics. Sorry, 2% characteristics. All 5 are the characteristics of a 2%er. You were born with them. So it's get back on the track in which you were born on. Get off the track that the world has sold you. Get off the track that the media has given you. Get off the track that the celebrities have fished you. Get off of the track that some of your family members have spoon-fed you. Get off of the track that the books that you've read has spoon-fed you. Get off of the track that Facebook has fed you. And get back on the track of where you belong. 2% do or die. So here's the bottom line. The 6th thing that causes failure, or the 6th thing that will bring you great, huge success. 98% of the population is unteachable, with big egos. They hate accountability, and they refuse to humble themselves. 98% of the population, unteachable, unaccountable, accountable to nobody. Don't tell me what to do. Danny Johnson, don't tell me how to do it. Who do you think you are talking to me like that? That's a big ego. That's a huge ego. Let me tell you how it works. Big ego, little tiny bank account. Big ego, itty bitty living space. Big ego, little tiny bit of influence. Humility is what the world is after. Humility in leaders. Humility in businesses. Humility in the coworkers. Humility in the home. The greatest respect that you will ever gain is if you're humble. But the world has sold us that if we are accomplished, we will gain respect. BS. There's a lot of accomplished, egotistical, narcissistic pigs. And no one respects them. Those people are lonely. Those people have to hire people to hang out with them because no one wants to be around them. That's not respect. That's a facade. So here we're sending kids to college, telling them to study hard, work hard. Someday you'll become successful. Did the plan work? Someday you'll be able to buy everything you want. Someday you'll be respected if you have a big title attached to your name. Humility brings success. Humility. But see, big egos are rampant everywhere. What is a big ego? An ego will not take personal responsibility for their failures. They'll not also take personal responsibility for their own success. They feel entitled to somebody else's success. Let me show you how ego plays out in marriage. The wife has the beautiful privilege of being home with her children and never thanks her husband for providing. But instead, that big egotistical broad constantly tells him he's not making enough money. And that she wants to travel and she wants to shop. And her girlfriends get to go do all these things, but she can't because her husband is just a mechanic. That's a big ego. Another big ego is a business owner who continuously blames their staff for not producing. Puts all the pressure on their staff and tells the staff, well, you're not doing it good enough. You're not good enough. When are you going to get this? Never looking in the mirror at their own leadership and figuring it out what it is that he or she is doing that is hindering the business from growth, and what do I need to learn that is different to motivate my staff? What do I need to learn that is different? What skill do I need to develop so that I can help carry this thing to the next level of success that I desire it to go? You see, that's entitlement. Ego and entitlement are very close friends. We live in an entitled generation right now, more than ever. We want entitlements from our government. We think that we are owed, that somebody else is supposed to take care of us, somebody else is supposed to give us comfort, somebody else is supposed to handle all our problems. We have children that are entitled to their parents' ATM machine, never saying thank you for the food in which is being put on the table every day, not thanking the father for working so hard on behalf of the family, not thanking the mother for putting up with him, with her children who can be flat-out brats. Not thanking the mother for getting up in those midnight feedings and ruining her body for another human to come into the world. The husband doesn't thank his wife for being willing to sacrifice her body, to ruin it, to never return back to what it was in her youth. But now she's got the United States map all over her belly. And a few other places too. But he never thanks her. She never thanks him. This is entitlement. It's just expected. That whoever it is that's taking care of the things inside of the house, there's never a thank you for that. It's just expected. And the same for at work. How many bosses get thanked by their employees? They don't. No, just entitled. Give me my paycheck. I put in my hours. Give me my paycheck. The boss feels lonely and wonders, why in the world am I doing this? I'm working so hard to provide a bunch of jobs for people, and all they do is complain about how much money they're not making. It's all ego. It's all entitlement. You got to weigh your ego with your bank account and see which one you want to grow more. You got to weigh your ego with your goal. Weigh your ego with your vision. You see, it's ego that will stop you short every single time. And what does it look like? Ego has many faces. It has many voices. Ego cares about what other people think. Ego cares about pleasing everybody else. In fact, pleasing some of the wrong people. Ego loves to blame others for their failures, owning nothing, taking no responsibility for their part in any of it. Well, Danny, you were molested at 3. How in the world can you take personal responsibility for that? I can't take personal responsibility for that. But what I can take personal responsibility for was whether or not I was willing to release and bless the poor man who was beside himself that caused him to do something that I know he has had to have regretted his entire life and has lived with guilt and shame because of it. So my responsibility is that I don't walk as a bittered, untrusting, and untrustworthy, resentful, blaming, bitter broad like the other millions of them that are out there who refuse to trust anyone, who refuse to work with men, refuse to work with, raise their sons to be strong men, all in fear that their sons or their husband is going to be just like the one that hurt her. So my personal responsibility is in what I choose to do with the circumstances in which I live in. That's leadership. That's what 2% of the population does. 98% of the population is easily offended by everything. 2% of the population does not take offense. They take responsibility. 98% of the population, when they've screwed up, they refuse to admit it. You see, ego, when I talked about fear, when I said, you know, are you afraid? Are you allowing your fear to hurt your company, to allow, hurt your family, to hurt yourself? No, I'm not afraid. It's just that, fill in the blank. That's called denial, which is nothing but ego. That's called justification, which is nothing but ego. It's just that. Whatever your fill in the blank is, that just means you're not taking any personal responsibility for any of your own thoughts. And let me ask you a question. Who's in charge of your thoughts? Who's in charge of your thoughts? You are. You're in charge of your thoughts. No one else is in charge of your thoughts. Who's in charge of your feelings? You are. You're in charge of your thoughts. You're in charge of your feelings. And guess what else you're in charge of? Your actions. You're in charge of your actions. No one else is in charge of your actions. No, they provoke me. No. You allow yourself to be provoked. You allow yourself to be provoked. The fact is, you can't any longer from this day forward say, my husband made me do it, my kids made me do it, my boss made me do it. I would be more successful if so-and-so did this for me. No. You see, 2% of the population understands this valuable thing. They will reap what they sow. And that if there's something lacking in their life, they know I just have to learn how to get it. I can learn to do anything. So learn how to fix it. So for example, if there is a struggle in the marriage, it simply just shows you that you're lacking specialized skill in the marriage. But our culture has taught us to blame our spouse for the failure of the marriage. Well, this is what I used to say, I'm just not good at being married. I suck at it. I wasn't made for it. This is the worst part of my life. That's how it used to be for me. But mind you, I was that woman in my early days of marriage that I was not a faithful woman. I belittled my husband. I emasculated my husband. I put him down constantly. I reminded him of his failures, reminded how he wasn't providing. I told him that he was a loser and he needed to get out of my house because I bought that house myself. That's how I was the first couple of years of marriage. It was wicked. No small wonder that I was failing in marriage. No small wonder that we hated each other. So if you're lacking in any place of your life, it simply just shows you that you're lacking a skill because you are responsible for your thoughts. You are responsible for your feelings. You are responsible for your words, and you are responsible for your actions, and you will reap what you sow. So I spoke these evil words over my husband, and I somehow expected him to rise up and be an income-producing asset of my family. As I was putting him down and telling him he didn't make money and that he didn't provide for the family and he wasn't living up to his responsibilities, that somehow that word was going to cause him to believe in himself and go start a business and become a millionaire one day. That somehow that line, those seeds that I was putting into him, somehow was going to translate into a top-producing man, a powerhouse man that I thought I deserved to be married to. You see, that's the deception of ego. They've put more focus, an egotistical person puts more focus on changing other people than they do changing themselves. They pay more attention to other people's faults than they do their own. In fact, they don't even know what their faults are because they're in such denial. Living in a facade. Well, Danny, no, that's not me. Man, I know exactly what my faults are. That's another form of ego. Yeah, beating yourself up. It's still pride. Wherever it is that you've put yourself on the throne, that's just nothing but ego. So when you use the excuse that I'm shy and I'm depressed, that's why I can't move forward, that's nonsense. That's ego. Ego is what stops you from success. Nothing else, just ego. So whatever it is that you're blaming, that's a sign of ego. Whatever it is that you're not taking personal responsibility for, that if you're saying, well, I don't have the right personality, that's why I'm not successful, get over your ego trip. There's a lot of shy people who've become very, very successful and financially independent. There's thousands, if not millions, of shy people who have become financially independent because they didn't use their shyness as an excuse not to try. So excuses will keep you broke. Ego keeps you broke. So ego shows up also as a know-it-all. They don't need any help. They're unteachable. They will get instructions and will not follow them. That's unteachable. Ego comes in the form of being fearful and allowing fear to control them. The comfort zone is an ego trip. A comfort zone is a selfish zone. A comfort zone is a selfish zone. Another form of ego is self-righteousness, which we have a lot of in our country today. Our culture is incredibly self-righteous. You got two political parties that are totally self-righteous, saying each other is self-righteous, not realizing that they themselves are self-righteous. I want you to point at me, please. Whenever you're pointing at someone else to blame someone, to judge someone, to point out what their faults are, you've got three fingers pointing right back at you. You are three times more wrong when you're trying to argue that you're right. You're three times more wrong in your judgment towards another person and judging their character. You're three times more wrong at the very thing that you're letting come out of your mouth. And then there are some of you that fight in silence, which is nothing but manipulation, which is ego. An egotistical person manipulates people. How does that work in the home? Well, if she's not happy, she will not give herself to him. And if he's ticked off, he won't listen to her. That's manipulation. How does manipulation work? Handle at work? I think you've probably seen and discovered lots of different ways of how manipulation works at work. Yeah, pressuring people with your leadership, forcing them so you can get what you want. Not finding out what they want. Not building up and edifying and encouraging other people to believe in themselves, but instead stacking the deck in your favor so that you're the winner and everybody else is the loser. False humility is another form of ego. You see this largely in religious circles. False humility. Oh, it wasn't me, it was the Lord. It was the Lord. Yeah, No, actually, real humility will say, thank you. It takes a lot for someone to give a compliment, doesn't it? It takes courage for somebody to give encouragement to another. And false humility tries to shy it away because you know what you're supposed to say to look humble. You see, you can't look and act humble. Humility is a condition of the heart. And no one knows what's inside of your heart, and no one knows what's inside of mine. Not even me, and not even you. The heart is deceitful above all else, ancient wisdom tells us. The heart is deceitful above all else. But yet, we like to judge people's character, don't we? We like to decide for them how they're thinking. In fact, there are some of us that are really, really good with our manipulation skills. We tell people how they're feeling. I know you feel like this, this, and that. Oh, really? I know what you're thinking. You're thinking this, this, and that. I know my boss. He's just in it for the money. I know my boss. All he cares about is that bottom line. He doesn't give a rip about any of us. Do you know what that is? That's straight up pride. You actually think you're God. Because he's the only one that searches the heart and the mind of a man. And still loves. Still loves. Even after all the searching of your heart and mind, still loves. But isn't it interesting that man assumes with his big ego, with her big ego, that she knows how her husband or his wife is thinking, knows what the children are doing and thinking and what's in their heart, knows what's in the boss's heart, knows what's in the customer's heart, knows what's in the Salesforce heart. Made all up my mind already. I already know what you're all about. Wow. And you judge harshly and cast them out and don't give them a chance to express themselves. That's a big ego. The justifier is a big egotistical pig. Justifying your excuses, trying to hide the fact that you really are afraid versus just confessing that you're afraid. Defensive, loves to argue. Get defensive when somebody points out something. When one of your insecurities is tapped on, you defend yourself and then try to prove yourself. And you spend your life proving that you're somebody that you're not. Versus being humble about it. I totally jacked that up, man. I screwed that up so bad. Is there any way you can forgive me? I mean, I can understand if you won't forgive me because that was a pretty bad screw up. I get it. And if you need some time to forgive me, that's okay. Because you're right. I really screwed this up. You see, we live in a culture that teaches hide. Fake it till you make it. Hide your true feelings. Hide your real self. Instead of really teaching the facts that humility wins at the end of the day. Yeah. Humility builds trust in an organization and a family. Humility, admitting where you messed up and admitting what you don't know. Admitting that you don't know it all. Admitting that you can't do it all. Admitting that you don't have a clue of what the future holds, but you're going to choose to believe anyway. But ego says, no one can see me sweat. They'll leave me if I'm honest. They won't like me or my brand anymore if I tell the truth. There couldn't be something further from the truth. Jealousy is another form of ego. Yeah, we're jealous of other people's success. We're jealous of somebody else's spouse. We're jealous of other people's car, their house. We're jealous of their career, jealous of their business, and somehow we feel entitled that we should have it, and we just gripe about it, and then we tear down the person that's more successful than us. Big ego condemns other people for their past and their present failures. Loves to point out the failures, is a record keeper of wrongs. Record keeper of wrongs, and judge people based on the records of wrongs. That's ego. Humility doesn't remind people of their failures. Why? Because a humble person knows that they are about to fail themselves. And they will reap what they sow. And if they put down other people for their failures, then by golly, they got 10, 30, 70, or 100-fold people coming back to put them down for their failures. The humble person knows, I'm going to support and believe in other people's dreams because I would like to receive the same thing. Being sarcastic, critical of yourself is a form of ego. Beating yourself up and other people, ego. Carrying animosity towards others or to a race, of a nation, of a culture, of a brand, of a business. Carrying that animosity. It's just nothing but ego. Sowing dissension, division, slander, and discord. We've got an entire media outlet, so that's all they do every single day, is sow dissension, sow division, discord amongst the people. They stir the pot of insecurities and creating an environment of people hating each other. And then we wear the t-shirt, buy the hat, and join the team. Ego will keep you broke, friend. And you got to weigh your ego with your bank account and figure out which one do you want to grow more. I would encourage you that rather than living life under the pain and the suffering of ego, live it in freedom. You know, every successful person I've had the chance to study and work with, they're the most humble people. Like, it's crazy how humble they are. You would never assume that. Because myself, like you, was trained to judge the rich. Trained to harshly judge the rich. Just like I know right now here in this room, there are a few of you who you've been counting heads. And you know you paid $500 to get here this weekend. Some of you paid $700 to get here this weekend to get in the room. Not including your airfare and hotel and all that stuff. You're sitting here counting heads. Okay, so if everyone paid $700, there are, wow, this many people. So that's how she's a millionaire. You want to know what judgment does? It fools you. And you don't get to discover the truth. Because the truth is, this multimillionaire does not take a salary from my business. And nor do I touch any of the profits. Once a year, a check is written to my name. It never enters my bank account. It's turned over in front of the accountant, and I sign it over to a charity. I don't take anything from this business. I'm here as a volunteer. I rather feed the poor than get paid to do this. Why? Because you can't pay me enough to be with you for 3 days. That's why. You can't pay me enough to deal with the you who is counting heads and prejudging me. You can't pay me enough to spend 3 days with you who are judgmental and self-righteous. You can't pay me enough to spend 3 days with you who is closed-minded and unteachable and filled with excuses. You cannot pay me enough to be with you for 3 days. So I choose to forfeit any payment that would come to me. And instead, we've built 1,000 homes for the extreme poor. Instead, last year alone, we fed 14,000 orphans. We have supplied water for over 1 million people through doing these training seminars. 1 million people who were dying from the water in which that they were given to drink, that now are alive, and many have been healed of disease. Many of them are stronger today because now they're able to grow crops. So with the money that this business makes, after taking care of the staff and having a storehouse in case of a rainy day for that staff, all the profits then go to the poor. So you can take your judgmental counting finger and shove it. Because I'm going to tell you something right now. I am a businesswoman who absolutely earns my wage, but I choose to forfeit that, and that's more than a lot of churches right here in this city is doing. That right here in this city, we have millionaires in a pulpit who've made their money from taking an offering and are feeding no poor. We, last year alone, helped 700, is it 700, Chad, girls out of the sex trade? 700 girls were freed out of the sex trade last year alone. Why? Because of the work that we're doing here. So if you probably don't care, you could care less about taking care of widows. You can care less about feeding the poor. You can care less about taking care of orphans. You can care less about providing housing for people who are suffering every single day living in plastic. You probably could care less about freeing girls and boys out of the sex trade. You could probably care less about taking care of the elderly who've been forsaken by their family, by their children and their grandchildren. I don't care if you care less or not. You just did without even knowing it by paying your fee to get in the event. So weigh your ego with your bank account and figure out which one weighs more. And the next time you try to judge someone who is successful, the next time you try to judge someone who is poor, pull your head out of your colon and start to learn how not to be the miserable person that you are right now. A judgmental person is a miserable person. A closed-minded person is a miserable person. So you have to weigh ego with bank account. And you have to decide, do I want the vision I want to live, or do I want to still live in this lonely, lonely place of isolation and unhappiness? Do I want to continue to live a life of dissatisfaction and discouragement? Do I want to continue to live this life of disadvantage instead of turning my disadvantage into my advantage? How do I want to live? Well, ego's the only thing standing in your way right this minute. I want you to listen to a song that we wrote specifically about ego. I want you to think and ask yourself this question as you listen to the lyrics of this song. What has to change in me in order for my life to change? Because you are responsible for your thoughts. You are responsible for your what? Feelings. You are responsible for your what? Mouth. And you are responsible for what? Your actions. You're responsible for all those things. Your spouse is not responsible. Your kid is not responsible. Your boss is not responsible. Your employees, your sales force, the customer, the market. Presidents are not responsible for how you live your life every single day. And nor will they ever be responsible for the choices that you make every single day. So what do you have to change in order for your life to get where you want it to go? You're the only one that can answer that question. So you think about that. What has to change in me? Write that question down. Ponder on that question. And if you're a praying person, you might want to ask your God, whether your God is Buddha or one of the 35,000 Indian gods, or your God is the one true God, the creator of the heavens and the earth. I challenge you now, ask him, what has to change in me? What has to change in me? Just one thing. What has to change in me in order for me to change my life? Because who is in control of your life? Who's in control of your life? You are. You are. You've been given the gift of a life. What are you doing with it? You were born a 2%er. What track are you on? Listen to this.
I'm so tired of living a lie. Okay.
Segment that you were talking about, that you're not free. Ego is bondage. It's blindness. It's heaviness. You've got a decision to make. Will you take the next step that is in front of you to gain the skill of annihilating ego so that the true you can actually rise up and you can actually get to know the real you? That you can actually live comfortably in your own skin. That you could be yourself and be free to dream and to go after it. To freely be comfortable with failure and to be comfortable with making mistakes. And doing what it takes to get to where you want to go. How do you annihilate ego? Well, first of all, you allow your eyes to be open to see where it is and how it's impacting your life. How many of you just did that? Good job. Number two is confessing it. You see, that which stays in darkness continues to control you. That which stays in darkness continues to control you. That which is that is brought to the light no longer has the same control over you. So you just had some things about yourself brought to the surface and brought to the light. That second step is confessing. This is what I see in me, and this has to change in me. Remember, work harder on yourself than you do anyone else. So we're going to give you that opportunity to confess before a group of 8 people. When you confess, now you own it. That's taking personal responsibility for your thoughts, for your actions, and your ways, which is a sign of humility. So we're going to have you get into groups of 8. I'll give you some instructions. Please follow them. Because 2% of the population actually knows how to do that. They're teachable. They are accountable. Can you see how ego is unaccountable? They're accountable to nobody. So we're going to get into groups of 8. And we're going to have the time to confess. What I ask that you do is please do not clap after each person has their time to confess. When you're all done, when the circle is all done, you're going to write down what you learned about yourself and what you learned about others and the realness of where people are actually living. Okay? So learn more about other people than you do your product, your service, your anything, and you'll be unusually successful. This right here is a case study. And you're going to see how all of these people want success in their life, right? And they were designed for it, yet this is the place that they have a need and the place that is hindering them and holding them back from success. That's going to be a very valuable thing throughout the rest of this weekend for you to understand about people. So we have volunteers that are here. They're going to go and they're going to tap every other row. If your row gets tapped, I want you to turn around and face the people that are behind you. Only on your feet, don't turn your chairs around. So every other group, the volunteers, go ahead and tap the rows. And everybody stand up. So the first row is going to turn around and face the second row. And you're going to be 4 people talking to 4 in front of you. Okay? So let me show you these 4s. If the second row can look at me, second row, look at me, second, fourth, sixth, raise your hands, you can see me. If you can see me, okay? So 1, 2, 3, 4 is right here. So that's 4 people that are going to talk to each other. 4 people are going to talk to each other. 4 people are going to talk to each other. 4 people are going to talk to each other. 4 plus the 4 in front of you means 8. 4 plus 4 is 8, right? So get in that group of 8 and grab hands. Okay? And now I need 1 of you from each group to please raise your hand, just 1. I want you to tap the person on your right. Because that is going to be the second person because you're the first. So whoever raised their hand, you're the first person in the circle to go. And the person to your right that you tap, they're number 2. And then the person to the right, it keeps going to the right all the way till the circle ends. And here's how this is going to go. Let me walk you through the exercise. You're going to say what your name is and where you're from. It sounds like, I'm Danny, I'm from Texas, right? From San Antonio. And then you're going to say what has to change in you. You're going to confess what you discovered about you that needs to change, okay? Is it excuses? Is that you don't have enough confidence? Have you been living in fear, right? Are you the doubt spreader? Do you understand? This is your time to take personal responsibility and to own it, okay? No longer shifting it off to someone else. Own your own feelings, own your own opinion, own your own insecurities, own it, and confess it. We're just looking for that one thing that you said. This is not time for a dissertation. This is not time for a paragraph to be spoken. It is real simple. What needs to change in me is super short, super sweet, okay? Then you're going to say, I promise I will not hurt anyone this weekend. You see, ego is present because of pain from our past. That's why ego is present. And we build a wall all around our entire life to hopefully protect us from getting hurt again. But that was the plan of a six-year-old. 100% of our adult personality was formed by the time we were 6 years old. And you made up your mind between 0 and 6 of how to protect yourself. And you created this thing called an ego to shield you from pain. How many of you would show with a show of hands that that plan failed? How many of you still got hurt and have continued to get hurt? So did your wall work? No, the wall has failed. So now it's time to take the wall down. And it's time to mature emotionally. It's time to allow healing to come into your heart. It's time to learn how to deal with people instead of running from them. It's time to learn how to deal with your failures instead of trying to hide them. It is time to tear the wall down so the real you can rise up and you can mature and gain wisdom, gain knowledge, gain skill, gain understanding. You cannot learn any of those things with ego because ego knows it all already. So you're going to promise not to hurt anyone because you will reap what you sow. So you're going to make that promise to the 8 people who are here this weekend. I promise I'll not hurt anyone. What are you not going to hurt them with? Your judgment, your self-righteousness, your wall. You're going to keep the wall down for 3 days. If you are uncomfortable with having your wall away from you, dude, Tuesday morning, you could pick it up and build it all over again. But chances are, you might be like our grads. They actually like not having the wall. They actually like not having a fortress built all around them. And they actually like trying them on for size and living in who the truth of who they are versus trying to be someone else. So you'll say, I promise not to hurt anyone. You're going to take off your ego. So I'll take my ego off. You're going to reach down to your ankles, not your sciatic nerve. You're going to reach down to your ankles. Not the excuse of my hip hurts and my knee hurts. No, you're going to reach to your ankles. If you reach for your ankles and not your sciatic and your hip and your knee, you'll actually get further to your ankles. So you're going to reach to your ankles and you are going to purposely embarrass yourself in front of this group of 8. But it's okay. They're all embarrassing themselves. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of us are going to embarrass ourselves by reaching to our knees and saying, I take off my ego and I throw it out the door. This is a monkey suit that you've been wearing. It stinks. It hasn't been washed for a really long time. It stinks, and everyone else knows it but you. Your wife knows it. Your husband knows it. Your kid knows it. Everyone else knows it but you as you're living in hiding. Okay, so what your name is, where you're from, what needs to change in me. No paragraph, just simple, quick, to the point. I promise I will not hurt anyone. Then you're going to reach to your ankles. I take off my ego and I throw it out the door. Okay? All right. I'm going to go ahead and go first before you all, and then it's your turn. By the way, as soon as you're done, you're going to write what you learned about yourself and what you learned about others. Okay? There can be no clapping or disruption in the room. All right? All right. So my name is Danny Johnson. I'm from Texas. And what needs to change in me is I must stop from this day forward being afraid to make decisions because I'm afraid of making a mistake. I promise I will not hurt anyone. I take off my ego and I throw it out the door. Mm-hmm. have about four groups left. Three groups left. Two groups left. One group left. Okay. Number seven. The seven biggest causes of failure. And or the seventh biggest cause for success. The seventh biggest cause of failure is a lack of forgiveness, mercy, and grace. But the seventh biggest cause for success is being merciful and gracious and compassionate, releasing people for the same mistakes you've made. Or that you will make. Because it's very clear that you will become what you judge. You will become what you judge. Why? Because you reap what you sow. You will become what you judge. Because you will reap what you sow. It's a law of judgment. There is a law of judgment, and it is that you will become what you judge. So 2% of the population are avid forgivers, forgivers of themselves, of themselves. You've heard the ancient wisdom say to love your neighbor as yourself. David, didn't your grandmother teach you that one? Right? Love your neighbor as yourself. Harshly judging yourself and keeping records of wrong against yourself is not loving yourself. It is actually destroying yourself. And you build more ego that way. Judging your neighbor is not loving your neighbor either. But see, when you can't love yourself, you can't love someone else. You know, it's been said, he who has been forgiven much forgives and loves much. But he who has not been forgiven much, the opposite is true. So why do I say about forgiveness? Forgiveness is the key to all breakthrough. It is the key to all breakthrough. How and why? Well, listen carefully. Unforgiveness is the root of all of our fears. Unforgiveness is the root of all of our fears. Where do fears come from? They come from our past. Fear is birthed in past experience. Fear is not about the future. It's about the past. And it's using our past to determine what the future looks like. So unforgiveness is the root of all your fears. So if you can identify your fears, and then you can trace your fear back to the who. Who was there? What happened? And what was involved in that experience that first planted that fear? You see, coming up here in 4 weeks is going to be creating a dynasty. which is exactly that. You will learn how to create your dynasty. And it is there where we go deep in following that fear to where it came from so it can be dismantled. Because most of us are controlled by our fears. And our fear is based in our past. So if you can identify, you can't run from your fear anymore. If you see your fear, remember, that which is in darkness comes into the light, no longer has power over us. So if you allow the fear to come out, you identify it. And now you track it. Where did this come from? Why am I afraid of making mistakes? Why am I afraid of making a bad decision? Why am I afraid of failing? How many of you have been afraid of failing? Okay? Is that because of a current manifestation in your mind? Or is it because of a past failure? It's because of a past failure, right? How many of you are afraid of rejection? Now, why would you be afraid of rejection? Only because sometime in your past, you were what? Rejected. So, unforgiveness of that person who rejected you, or unforgiveness of the failure that you had with whoever was involved, is currently haunting you. Only because you haven't forgiven yet. That's it. Only because you haven't forgiven yet. So unforgiveness is the root of all your fears, insecurities, anger, frustration, rage, judgment, lack of self-esteem, and self-worth. Unforgiveness is the root of all of those things. It is the root of all of your excuses is unforgiveness. It's the root of all of your pain. Unforgiveness is the root of all of your inaction, your lack of self-motivation, self-hate, depression. The root of depression is unforgiveness. The root of oppression, suppression, the root of your defensiveness is unforgiveness. Being argumentative is unforgiveness. The root of being arrogant is unforgiveness. It's the root of rebellion, insubordination, and stubbornness, which is witchcraft. The root of justifying your actions, the root of jealousy, comparing yourself to others, needing to be in control and control everybody's breath, the need to control everyone's thoughts, the need to control everyone's actions, the need to control every minute of somebody else's life, control freaks, is unforgiveness. The need to be the know-it-all, the root of sarcasm, criticism of yourself and others. It's the root of a people pleaser, the self-sacrificer, the martyr, and especially the root of self-righteousness is unforgiveness. How many of you have some unforgiveness? So let's attack it. Because I'm telling you, I have studied successful people that are in the 2%. And these people practice forgiveness. They practice forgiveness. It's part of who they are. And guess what? It's part of who you are too. Do you guys remember being little kids and your very best friend hurting you and you forgave and you hugged and you kept playing? Have you ever watched little kids with each other? They get over it, don't they? But somewhere, somehow through life, and I believe largely it was training from your parents, and stubbornness and ego, where we want to hold on. We'd rather be bitter. We'd rather be mad. We'd rather be angry. Why? Because for some people, pain is their comfort zone. They actually like pain. They actually enjoy it, which is definitely needing some help. There's wonderful, wonderful excitement and anticipation and satisfaction and fulfillment that's waiting for you on the other side of these 7 simple steps. So for right now, I want you to write down your name in big 3-inch letters. because you're the first person you need to forgive. How many of you are your own worst critic? We're going to put that to a stop by taking something away, which is unforgiveness. Next, I want you to close your eyes, and the very first person that pops in your head is someone that you need to forgive. Someone that wronged you, stole from you, hurt you, slandered you. It could be someone from way, way, way back to the fifth grade or kindergarten. It could be one of your parents. It could be your sibling. But there's somebody that you have not forgiven. Write their name down. And I want you to listen to the song that we wrote about forgiveness. And I want you to just sit there with that person as though they are right there with you. We're like, Danny, I am here with me. Yes, perfect. But now you're going to talk to yourself like you do all the time. But this time, it's going to be on purpose. You already are highly skilled at talking to yourself. So you're going to tell yourself, I choose to forgive and release you. Because the word forgive actually means release. I want you to hold your hand out like this. Hold on tight, like make a fist really tight. Now I want you to let it go. That's a release. You're holding on to something that's keeping you in the place you're at right now. You got to let it go. So letting yourself go from whatever failure, whatever it is that's in your past that you are not proud of, that you're upset with yourself with, that you remind yourself, you said you were your own worst critic. So what is that one thing that you're criticizing yourself about? And you're going to say, I choose to forgive you and I choose to release you for. Now say what you're forgiving yourself for. I forgive you for going into all of this debt and not going after those dreams that we had. Whatever it is. I forgive you for being lazy. I forgive you for procrastinating. I forgive you for getting into that relationship you knew you were supposed to get into. I forgive you for being an egotistical pig that I don't even like. Do you understand? So say what you're forgiving for, whatever the instance or the act in which you've done that you are holding yourself in a prison with. Forgive yourself for that. And then you say, I choose to release you. I choose to bless you. Okay? I choose to release you. I choose so. I forgive. You can talk to yourself. I forgive you, Danny, for procrastinating and making decisions. Because your stupid fear of making a mistake. I forgive you for producing the environment where I chose to feel stuck, overwhelmed, and filled with anxiety. I want you to own your own feelings, own your own choice, and also own the right to release and to bless. And then you go to the next person. My next person was my father, the man that raised me, my stepdad in all reality. I needed to forgive him for molesting me when I was 12, for beating my mother, for beating me. It took 6 whole years before I fully forgave him. But I fully forgave him. So with that person, I want you to pretend like you're sitting across the table from them and do the same exact thing. I forgive you for, say what the scenario was that happened. And say, I chose to feel, and say how you felt. So in the case with my father molesting me, I felt dirty, and I felt ashamed. I felt worthless. I felt disgusting. I felt like no one would ever love me because of the way you touched me. But I choose right now to release you and to bless you. You owe me nothing. That's real forgiveness, is that you're not looking for someone to pay for your pain. You're not looking for someone to justify your pain. But instead, you are owning it and saying, I release you. You owe me nothing. Okay? Now, when you forgive somebody, it doesn't condone their actions. but it has you take responsibility for what you've done with those actions. That's what you're responsible for, is how you've acted since that time. So we're going to play this song. You've got about 5 minutes. Deal with those two people on your list.
To break.
It takes courage to forgive, and it takes humility to forgive. So I just want to see if there's any of you that at least ventured out and attempted to say the words in which I challenged you to say. That you at least with your heart said, I need to do this. How many of you know that you need more forgiveness in your life, especially at home, especially with your career? It stops your financial growth. It stops your fulfillment and your satisfaction. Friends, we began this session 3 hours ago, and I made a promise that I would reveal to you the steps of how to remove things from your life that could help you get to where you want to go. Did you discover what those steps were? I promised that I would show you the difference between 98 and 2% of the population. Was it very clear, the differences between both of these populations? How many of you say yes, that was clear? I promised you in the very beginning of this session that I would reveal to you the things that were hindering you, stopping you, standing in your way. That if you make the choice to remove these things, then everything that you want is on the other side of it. How many of you discovered what those things were? And how many of you were able to see clearly what was holding you back? Now you have a clearer picture. We promised you would have a clearer picture, and now you have it. We also promised you that we would be able to teach you step by step how to break through and how to move forward. We just went through two exercises that, whether you realize it or not, breakthrough is already in the room. Yeah. It's already here. It's already in you. How many of you have felt a shift inside of your gut already? And that's because of what you chose to do. I told you in the beginning, what you choose to get out of this next hour will determine how far and how fast you go. If you choose to just let it glaze right over you, you can forget about it. You're going to leave this place the same way. So for those of you that chose to go all in on everything that we talked about this morning, and you learned how to take personal responsibility, and you learned that you are in control of your mouth, you're in control of your thoughts, you're in control of your feelings, therefore you're in control of your what? Future. You're in control of your future. This afternoon, we're going to get deeper into building a business and building a career and the very important steps that it's going to take for you to build a client base that is viral, for you to be able to build and develop an organization, whether that's a family or it's a business or it's a career, that's going to be more successful than it is today. How many of you would like to learn how to do those things? You're going to learn some time-tested secrets. You're going to learn a recipe. You're going to learn something that so many thousands and hundreds of thousands of people before you have learned, that have come through these trainings, through our website, millions that have come to our website that are more successful today than when they were before they ever came to that site. So we're going to give it all to you. I ask that you give it all back to us. So here's your next assignment. You're going to go to lunch with someone you do not know. You're going to break out of your comfort zone and out of your cliques. You may have come here with your spouse. Go to lunch with someone you do not know. Well, I don't know my spouse. Don't even try it. Don't even try it. You're right, but don't even try it. Okay, so go to lunch with someone that you do not know. And I want you to break your comfort zone even further, that if you normally just hang out with your own race, I want you to break out of your comfort zone. And if you're one of those really pale white people that your veins actually show, you can see the green lines and the blue lines, I want you to go find the darkest, most beautiful, chocolateous, amazing, purpley black skinned person you could ever find. They're in the room. Both are in the room. And by the way, those of you that you normally just hang out, and if you are of that beautiful African descent that I am also from, believe it or not, 10% of my blood from a DNA test came out that I am African. And I am very proud of that 10% that is speckled all over my skin. If it would just connect, I would have had the blessing of all the African part of that skin. Anyway, if you are of African descent and you never go hang out with those pale people, I want you to rise up in your leadership and prove that ego is gone. Get rid of your prejudices and your prejudgment and go to lunch with them. If you are a guy and you never are around women, go find a woman and vice versa. If you are one of those really smart, highly educated peoples, or at least look like one, I want you to find the dumbest looking person in the room and go to lunch with them. And if you are the dumbest person in the room, I want you to go find the smartest person in the room. I want you to break down every barrier that you have against people. I want all divisions. If you are like the super, like, hooky, spooky, like, metaphysician, ohm person, I want you to find the most religious, Christian, Catholic, Baptist, Protestant that you can find in the place. You know who they are. They all look the same. They look like they've been baptized in pickle juice. I'm only kidding. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying? And if you are that super religious person and you look that certain way and you only hang out with the people that believe in your religion, break free from the bondage of your religion. And I want you to go find somebody that's tattooed, has gauges, purple hair. I want you to go find someone you normally would never associate with. If you are one of them law-abiding, perfect citizens, I want you to go find someone that's done some prison time because they're here too. They're here too. We all have a past. Okay? If you normally just hang out with people that look like you, act like you, talk like you, and eat like you, get away from them! All of that is narcissism. If all you do is surround yourself with people who have your same interests, that's narcissistic. Get away from narcissism. Become a real person. Get your ego out of the way and go to lunch with someone you do not know. And what will you talk about? You'll talk about the vision that you're going to start building. That's what you're going to talk about. You're going to talk about what you got out of this morning. You're going to have more confession time. Listen, we all suck. Let's be real about it. Okay? This is a safe place to suck in. I know your family isn't and most of your churches ain't and so is work. But right here is a safe place. Go suck with each other. That did not sound right. This is first steps to success. First steps to success. First steps to success. First steps to success. I will see you back here at 2 o'clock. It's 12:30 right now. You have an hour and a half break for lunch. You're going to lunch with someone you do not know. Get away from each other.